Please stand and salute the flag of our great country. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is a prayer for meetings. O God, my God, cast upon this gathering the glances of thy loving kindness. Keep safe each and all in thy custody and under thy protection. Send down upon these souls thy heavenly blessings. Immerse them in the ocean of thy mercy and quicken them through the breath of the Holy Spirit. Thou art the powerful, the omnipotent, the merciful, and thou art the Lord of grace abounding.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, before you get too far away, we need to hear about Kiwanis. We know there's a lot going on.
Thank you. The Arroyo Grande Valley Kiwanis Club is very active in this community, and we have a number of projects ongoing. Monthly, we're involved in Arroyo Grande and Bloom, Five Cities Christian Women's Food Bank, Highway Cleanup, projects that we accomplished during the year. We just finished a Seniors Day at the Melodrama, where we take people who are unable to get out on their own to the Melodrama for the day. We've given support for the Carriage House across the street here. Financial support for Arroyo Grande High School robotics.
My apologies for starting the meeting late. We were in closed session, and it went a little bit longer than we anticipated. So once again, our apologies for starting late. The council did discuss personnel issues in closed session, and we have no report at this time. Item number five is special presentations, and this evening we do have one. It's an honorary proclamation declaring February 2008 as Grand Jury Awareness Month, and I would step down from the dais at this time, and I believe, Robert Myers is here. Well, we do this every year to recognize the importance and the dedication and enthusiasm of our grand jury. And so this evening, I have the privilege of presenting to Robert an honorary proclamation declaring February 2008 as Grand Jury Awareness Month. And I'll read it. It's, whereas the civil grand jury consists of a panel of 19 citizens, which serves the citizens of the County of San Luis Obispo for a period of 1 year after selection. And whereas the individual grand juries are selected from a list of 30 volunteer applicants that have been screened and qualified by the judges of the Superior Court, with final selection of the 19 obtained by a random drawing. And whereas the jurisdiction of the grand jury extends to all activities of local government within the geographic limits of San Luis Obispo County, including public-private transactions. And whereas the grand jury in a large measure relies upon public awareness and responsiveness to the public and to its public reports, which detail its findings and recommendations. And whereas it is believed that public awareness of the grand jury's function and purpose can be furthered by governmental declarations of awareness. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, mayor of the city of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the city council, do hereby proclaim February 2008 to be Grand Jury Awareness Month in order for all citizens to become better acquainted with the purposes of the grand jury, to give attention to the grand jury's public reports, and to encourage public participation in the grand jury process. Robert, it's my privilege to present this to you.
Thank you, Mayor. And we'd very kind of
love you to say a few words.
I would. Thank you very much. My name is Robert Myers. I'm here today to accept this proclamation on behalf of the grand jury concept, both the grand jury concept for this county and the grand jury concept for the state as a whole. The grand jury is a, well, you people know, but maybe the audience doesn't know. It's kind of the its main function is to safeguard the public by evaluating efficiency and goodness and good functioning of government, and then to report to the county what its findings are, with the hope that, of course, that will make things better in the county. And as a former grand juror for 97 and 98, I can report that the county grand jury in this county particularly is well respected, and its reports are accepted by and large and acted on when appropriate. Sometimes the governing body doesn't agree with the reports, and that's fine. We're just trying to do what's good. I got a public announcement while I'm here. Primarily, this awareness is to allow the people in our county to know that the grand jury is there. And why we do this at this time is because starting in February, the applications for the grand jury are now available at the jury services in San Luis Obispo. You can find them by going to the website of the county and going down to grand jury, or you can go into jury services in SLO at the courthouse and get an application. The service is for 1 year. It's very, very beneficial to you. It's beneficial to the county. And those that haven't served in the grand jury, I recommend that you should do that. So applications are now being accepted. You just have to be over 18 years old and willing to serve and have the time and energy. You will be interviewed and sort of investigated, but that's not a tough job. So anyway, on behalf of the grand jury, I invite everybody here and everybody that's on the greater audience to hop on down to the county courthouse, get an application, or go online and get an application and join the other grand jurors that have served and think it's a good function. And many thanks to the mayor and the council and hardworking staff, you too, Steve, for putting up with us and letting us come every year.
Good. Thank you, Robert. Okay, we'll move on to item 6, agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
Well, as I take my walks, I go by that area at different times, and I've been appalled at the sight that it is in at this time. My understanding was, first of all, it was to have landscaping to camouflage what it is, a facility building. There are more than 25 cars there. Currently, it looks very much like a junkyard. There is no mitigation done for erosion control. Now it is pouring rain. This what really irks me more than anything is that there's a gully that has formed. The asphalt is gone in the parking area, the dirt is going down, there's silt going down, and we're supposed to be watching the environment, what goes into our creek. And you go down to the end, and you can see that there's no improvements there, and I know there's some hold up with, you know, do it this way or do it that way. But then on the other turn, you look across the creek, and the Cherry Project over there has done the beginnings of what is costing thousands and thousands of dollars of erosion and protection for our creek. I don't really understand why builders are held so accountable and a school district is not. As note, the project is in full operation. The baseball diamond was removed and has not been returned. They've actually destroyed this park area. There is no access to the park. The buildings are substandard. There are three portables. They're not even painted. They were used buildings. The exterior needs to be renovated. They have not taken care of by the steps. It is just dirt. It can erode there, and I'm sure it's eroding as we're having rain. And to tell you the truth, the project is just a disgrace. I think at this point we're past it being monitored, and I think it should be red tagged. Something that looks this bad should be in an industrial zone. There's waste materials that have been left there for over a year. And I just really needed to bring it back to the council for attention. I thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Steve, you want to follow up on that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Once again, items, observations not on this evening's agenda. No one else? Okay. We'll close community comments and suggestions, and we'll move on to item 8. Item 8 is the consent agenda, and if you're following along on this evening's schedule, you'll see consent items 8A through 8G. These are normally items that the council approves in one action, unless there is a particular item of consent that an individual council member would like to pull for further clarification or an individual action. This is also an opportunity for you, the audience, to come forward and comment on any one of the consent items. So I would invite you at this time, if anyone in the audience would like to come forward on any of the consent items, once again, that's 8A through 8G, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. And once again, please be mindful of the three-minute rule. Anyone? No one? Okay. We will close public comment on the consent agenda and bring this back to the council. What is the will of the council? Items to pull this evening?
I need to pull 8C for correction.
C, Charlie?
Yes.
Any others? All right. I'll entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8G with the exception of 8C.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Anything in there tonight, Tim?
No, Mayor Farrar.
Okay, thanks. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Mayor Pro Tem, 8C.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have on the dais here an addendum to the minutes of November 27th when my comments were left out. So this will bring them up to date if we include those, and I'm ready to move that we accept the minutes with these additions.
As amended?
Yes.
Okay.
So moved.
All right. We have a motion, and do we have a second?
Second.
And a second. Further discussion? Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Guth?
Yes.
Three. Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
How did that make you feel when they left out your comments?
Not so good.
Not so good. Yeah.
The agreement. Exhibit A attached to the resolution in your packet shows the general location of the dog park. In general, the dimensions indicated in the rendering are agreeable to staff. It is recommended the council designate the southern end of Elm Street Park and allows staff the flexibility to work with the Dog Park Association to determine final locations of fences, walkways, and gates. There is no financial impact, although there will be some expenditure of staff resources and time for maintenance. City staff has been in discussion with the Five Cities Dog Park Association in an effort to find a suitable location for the dog park in Arroyo Grande. The Dog Park Association has over 200 members in the five cities, and approximately 100 of those are actually Arroyo Grande residents. In addition, according to the Dog Park Association statistics, there are 1,900 registered dogs in the city of Arroyo Grande. The retention base on the southern end of Elm Street, actually owned by the city of Arroyo Grande, but located in Oceano, was originally identified as a possible location as a dog park. However, due to water, maintenance, jurisdiction, and liability issues, that park, it was determined that site would be very difficult to develop. Subsequently, the Dog Park Association and staff identified the southern end of Elm Street Park as a possible location. At its August 14, 2007 meeting, the City Council held a public hearing and adopted a resolution designating the southern portion of Elm Street Park as a dog park. The council also approved an MOU with the Dog Park Association. However, subsequent to the August 14 meeting, three issues developed. First, representatives of the Park Place Apartments adjacent to the park challenged the validity of the city's approval of the dog park site, citing a lack of environmental finding. In addition, the Dog Park Association claimed 501c3 nonprofit status under the umbrella of the SLOPOS, or San Luis Obispo Parks Open Space and Trails Foundation. However, SLOPOS declined to sign the MOU. And lastly, the Five City Dog Park Association declined to gain independent legal status, so they were not able to sign the MOU themselves. Consequently, due to all those issues, we're back to City Council for reconsideration. In response to the environmental challenges, staff prepared a mitigated negative declaration for the proposed dog park site. Mitigations include landscaping to screen the dog park visually from the apartments, daily cleanup and disposal of dog waste, restriction of construction hours, and limiting of hours of operation to 8 a.m. to dusk. It should be noticed that dogs on leash are currently allowed in the park now with no time restrictions. If the City Council does not feel the mitigated negative declaration is appropriate, then project approval will not be considered. In lieu of an MOU, staff has prepared an adoptive park agreement similar to those used by San Luis Obispo County. The Dog Park Association has agreed to adopt the park, design the facility, raise funds, construct the improvements, and assist with operation, monitoring, cleanup, and maintenance of the facility. Alternative sites have been mentioned, including the northern end of Elm Street Park and Shumash Park over in Pismo Beach. However, the northern end of Elm Street Park has more active recreation, the access road to the public works and parks water wells is located there, and the newly renovated group barbecue area would be nearby. In fact, the barbecue and the playground, the tot area, they're directly between the parking lot and where the northern end, if we put a dog park in the northern end, the barbecue and the playground are directly between the parking lot and that dog park, potential dog park site. So staff does not recommend that. The following alternatives are provided for the council's consideration. Approve staff's recommendation to adopt a resolution adopting a mitigated negative declaration, designating a portion of Elm Street Park as the southern boundary as a dog park. Approve and adopt a park agreement with the Five City Dog Park Association and authorize the city manager to approve minor changes and execute the agreement. Second alternative would be to modify the mitigated measures and adopt the resolution and agreement, or direct staff to prepare recommendations to relocate the dog park to another area of Elm Street Park. Direct staff to identify other alternative sites. Modify staff's recommendations or improve. Do not recommend approve staff's recommendations or provide direction to staff. Advantages of the approval of staff's recommendation included allowing the Dog Park Association to continue design of the facility, pursuit of donations and other funding, and to move forward with implementation improvement plans. The site has minimal active recreation, irrigation, potable water, and parking are available, and restrooms are nearby. Disadvantages of approving staff's recommendation include elimination of that area of the park for active recreation, and the owner of the Park Place Apartments is opposed to the project there. This project was reviewed in compliance with CEQA, the CEQA guidelines, and the City of Rio Grande rules and procedures for implementation of CEQA. Based on the review, staff does not anticipate
raised there. Is your belief that the negative deck is still the appropriate document?
Yes.
Thank you. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other questions? Just one, Doug. And I'll refer to the same document. I noticed the term used in that document was regional dog park. I always assumed that this was more of a community-oriented dog park. Is that?
That's correct.
Pretty much how this is cast.
I would say that's how it's cast exactly. It's Five City Dog Park Association, which is, as I indicated, there's 1,900 registered dogs in Rio Grande and 100 members of Dog Park Association in Rio Grande. So I would say it's pretty much a local thing. It's within walking distance of a large area of Rio Grande. So my opinion is more of a local facility.
Okay. Councilmember Costello?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have just one quick question. In terms of the staff report and the planned operation of this facility, The Five Cities Dog Park Association is going to be performing a number of tasks. I just ask, what happens if they don't perform those tasks satisfactorily?
There's a couple of things that happen. Number one, we could try to find other volunteers to perform those tasks. Staff potentially could take over some of those tasks, or there's a possibility of the dog park just closing. And that's actually something that the Dog Park Association is aware of, that, you know, if they don't fulfill their obligation, the park may go away.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. This is a public hearing, and we typically allow the other significant party in our public hearings to go first. And tonight that would be the representative from the Five Cities Dog Park Association. Anyone?
I choose to listen to what the apartment residents have to say first.
Well, I'm sorry, but we always let the other significant party in the action go first, and then you'll get your chance. Okay, so are you representing the dog park?
I'm the president of the Five Cities Dog Park Association.
You're first.
I'm only here to discuss what their concerns are, and I don't know what those concerns are yet.
Okay. Anyone else from are you the spokesperson? You are. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Then what we will do, if we'll open it up once again to general comment, and then you've deferred your comments to the end, and that's fine. So anyone else who would like to come forward, again, try and make your comments brief.
Hi, my name is Megan James. I live at 400 South Elm in the Park Place Apartments. I have a toddler and another one on the way, and I love the apartments we live in. Lots of families, no animals allowed. The park is right next door. It's great for being a parent. My concern is that if there's a dog park so close to our apartments, the noise will affect all the mothers who stay at home with their children. The smell, the amount of dog activity makes me a little nervous having children that I walk with to the park every day. As it stands, we have many people in the neighborhood who walk by every day with their dogs. We greet them. We say hello. It's one of my son's favorite things. There's one lady who actually comes by three or four times a day with their dog on a leash. But when a dog is on a leash, the owner has control of the dog, how it behaves, how it responds. When that dog gets off the leash, then, you know, just simple, the dog saying hello to other people, other dogs. It's very noisy. It also becomes dangerous. You never know how a dog will react to a small child. While a dog may be very well maintained around other adults, you get them around a small child, accidents happen all the time. So a big concern of mine is the noise, the danger factor, and the smell, of course. I used to own a dog, and, you know, cleaning up after one dog one time a day, you'd still have a smelly backyard. So I'm imagining all the dogs of Arroyo Grande and the surrounding areas, since I don't believe there is another dog park available. That's a lot of dogs. That's a lot of poop, for lack of a better word. And that all comes right into our yards. And since we have such small yards, that's not real nice to have to keep your windows shut and deal with that every day when you pay to live there. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Doug, you don't happen to have a drawing, a concept drawing that you could throw up on the screen, do you?
I'm afraid I don't have one to put up on the screen. I do have a concept drawing, and in fact, you have it in your packet as well. I'm sorry, I don't have that.
That shows the fenced off area. You don't have that?
The what?
This is going to have an enclosed fence.
Leashes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Mr. Mayor, Council, my name is Anthony Throckmorton, and I'm a resident of 400 South Elm. We have a beautiful view of the park as it is right now. We have issues with the general public in the park at times, 2 o'clock in the morning. They decide they want to go running through the park. That's one thing. As far as the dog park is concerned, I'm not opposed to the dog park, but I don't want it in my backyard, simply because we're on the second floor. No matter what you do, we're still going to see it. granted, now I'm sure that most of the members of the Five Cities Dog Park Association will control their dogs very well, but it's the rest of the people that are going to come from outside of the area that we can't necessarily control. I'm sure they're not going to be a representative there checking to make sure they're a member of the Five Cities Dog Association. 1,900 dogs in the city, I mean, basically anybody can bring their dog. If we're saying, no, you can't because you're not a member, that's kind of an exclusivity thing. It's not fair to everybody else. The truth of the matter is, you know, I love dogs. However, we're not allowed to have them. We do pay a large amount for our housing. The bottom line is, you know, once it's approved, we've decided we're going to move. And it's nothing against the Dog Park Association. I think it's a great thing. But the problem is you can't control what every owner's going to do. The problem is, and what I'm concerned about is, when we address, you know, if there are issues, we call the Five Cities Dog Park Association, is it going to get back to the city? Is something going to get done about the issues that are not being taken care of? You know, I have two small children, and personally, on the weekends, I don't want to be woken up at 8 o'clock. Usually I am by my children anyway. But, you know, during the week, I have no problem with it. You know, I'm usually gone by 5 o'clock in the morning anyway. It's just not for just myself, but the future people that may live there. It's not a great location for it. I mean, you're talking about building in somebody's backyard. And during the summer, of course, you know, it's great. The weather here is awesome. We can open the windows. We don't need an air conditioner. But if we have, you know, no matter what, the smell of dog urine, smell of dog fecal matter, because you're not going to get every little piece up, it's going to come and it's going to fill the house. The other thing that I was concerned about, too, is the well houses that are existing there now. To me, that would seem like that would be part of the public water source. And irregardless, dog urine will leach into the ground at some point and pollute those wells. And then what are we going to do for city water? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
My name is Jennifer Hewen. I also live there at Elm Street Park Place. And my issue, I had six dogs growing up. None of them were leash trained, so I'm with all of you as far as having a dog park. However, we also live on the second floor. In fact, we're neighbors. And the issue is that our windows, literally the kitchen and the bedroom, face right out into the park. We love the view of the park. We love to listen to kids waking us up in the morning. Doesn't bother us at all. But to have that smell coming in through your kitchen, through your bedroom, it's not acceptable. I mean, it's something that you wouldn't want for yourself, let alone having to be in an apartment and you're stuck there. We also have older people that live downstairs from us that would be something that would cause them medical issues. So there is a huge issue with the smell as well as the sanitation. And it's something that you can't just, you know, pick up the fecal matter. It's something that happens as the dog's doing it or, you know, such. And there's also another issue for me with the kids going into the park is we have a lot of disruptive kids come through, and not that the high schoolers are all bad, but we do have some disruptive high schoolers that come through, and I'm afraid of what they might do, taunting and teasing dogs, even though they're there with their owners. And we have issues getting people to respond when things do go on in the park, so that would be another issue, is the actual teasing of the animals, as well as kids being afraid of dogs. And what happened when the dog park kind of like unofficially opened, the first week that everybody found out that there could possibly be a dog park, we had people bringing rogue dogs to the park, huge dogs. I mean, there was one couple that brought a pit bull that just terrorized the kids in the park. And so there's a huge concern for me about people, like, you know, automatically just taking their dogs straight out of the car without a leash and into the thing. Now, I understand that all of you here obviously are responsible. You are not who I'm talking about. But there is that issue. And there's also a parking issue as it is at the park. And everybody be parking on Elm Street. And I also take the bus, which is right there. And some days I can't even get on the bus without going into the middle of the street to get on the bus. And I can't imagine it, that we're becoming an open park. Those of us that need it.
One of my dogs doesn't chase balls. She just sits there and waits for someone to come visit her, and the other dog would chase balls. It's quiet. It didn't smell. it was self-policed, and if somebody didn't do their own work, somebody else did it for them. It was a really good place to come and socialize. It was a good place for the dogs to socialize. It's a kind of place that we need. It's an asset. It's an attribute. We would all go out of our way to make sure it was a really good thing for Arroyo Grande and for the neighborhood. My dogs would be really disappointed with me if I didn't. So I think all we're here tonight is asking to give us the chance. We think that it will be a really good thing for the community, and we think we'll do a good job for the city. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Again, not representing Five Cities Dog Park.
Hello. My name is Mitch Mundell. I've been here before. I represent myself as a renter. I represent MGF Enterprises, who owns the property at Park Place Apartments. I want to reintroduce the petition that I...
I think we have a copy of it here.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure. And I also presented a letter to the city council kind of reviewing this CEQA that you're relying on here. We don't – the people that were opposed to this, out of the apartment complex, probably 20 people that I talked to very generally were against it and said they would move. There were like two people that didn't care or were for it or whatever, but the majority of them were against it, which would be, you know, my employer provides housing over 140 units around the park, and it's going to be detrimental to them. I gave you about 50 pages that I just took off the internet from dog owners and lovers of dogs who... in their cities had dog parks, and the stories are endless about dog fights, people being injured, and so on. And so then you go to the report on the aesthetics. I mean, there's no evidence in this report that backs up that a hedge is going to block the view of the dog park. I mean, if we were to instead do it, we're talking these people are arm's distance from the park. And we're talking that they're going to have 6 inches of fence between their barbecue and the park. Yet the city has so eloquently stated in the report that they can't have it on the other side because there's health code issues with the barbecue area on the other side of the park. Now, I think they should have a park. I think that the place at Casa Bella is perfect for them, but every city keeps booting them out because one or two citizens comes forward. And here we have a business providing housing that's needed in this area, and it's a direct conflict with that. And then you have the air quality. You've heard the people talk. I mean, if you had and there's this theory that's running throughout this proposal that 75 dogs are all that's going to be there. On what basis? We just heard 1,900 dogs in Arroyo Grande, and also that this park is designed for the five cities, which has 3,500 dogs. Who's going to prevent them from showing up any day? And you're going to have neuter clinics, and you're going to have licensing clinics. That's going to bring more people. It's advertised on the World Wide Web. How are you going to prevent the traffic problems, which aren't even addressed in this report, as far as I have personal experience with events? And I can tell you that people are going to double park. They're going to block the driveway at 400 South Elm while they take their dogs out of the car. And, you know, if a resident says something, they're going to say, oh, don't worry about it. It's only going to be a minute. And they're really nice people, but these might not be the people that are doing it. And a lot of times the people we see at the park aren't members of the Five Cities Dog Park Association. And this is a special interest group, and we're talking about people who live in places. And I guarantee you that if you were to put this park, say, up on James Way, in the middle of million-dollar homes, it ain't going to happen. Because those people will tell you, I used to own a home. I lived in Pacific States. And those people there would not, they don't like it when you park in front of their house. They're going to come out and say, hey, you can't park there. It's a city street. So we're going to have a huge parking problem that isn't addressed. And here you're going to affect people, 24 residents. They'll move out, and then we're not going to be able to fill the apartments. So you're going to affect a business. You're going to have monetary loss. You're not going to be able to prevent the noise of people honking to notify the people that we're here to get you. Come on out. Beep, beep, beep. You're not going to prevent people from stopping. We've all seen it. You go to a soccer game, people do it there. So it's just that it's being put next to the fence line of a high residential building. There's hundreds of renters all around the park. And granted, I don't know these people. Maybe they all live in houses. And that's nice when you have a house. You live 5 miles away, this park is a great idea. Because after you're done, you leave. But these people have to be there every single day, 365 days a year, with 75 dogs to 3,500 dogs. And it would be a traffic nightmare, which isn't addressed in this report. There's a lot of assumptions and a lot of glossed over areas in here. When I first found out about this, I had residents come to tell me about it. That's how I found out. And they were terrified. You know, and I'm just here because they brought me here. I can move. I can go somewhere else. These people, most of them cannot. They work here. They live in these apartments. And this is going to have adverse effect on them. And you won't be able to stop the noise. Whistles, yelling, dogs barking, let alone the dangers. The transportation, circulation, it's already been discussed. And then how are you going to, what are you going to do for that housing? You know, it's going to be a huge problem. And then there is wildlife there. There's owls in the trees and things. I mean, there's a, this review is not on target. It's off. It's all been glossed over. Just like when I first heard about this, I was told nobody opposed it. That there was a canvas of people who went to the apartments and the area, and everybody was for it. Nobody said no. But yet I walked over there, and in a very short period of time, got all these people to sign this thing, and they were so glad to see me. They're like, oh, thank God you're here. We don't want this park here. And so, you know, that's where this all started. And then the owner found out, and he was very upset. And, you know, he tries to be a good citizen to the city, painting his buildings, trying to beautify it, provide housing. I think he does a pretty good job of that. And it's a tough business. And I do think they deserve a park, but I think they deserve it in a better suited area than a high-density rental market area. These renters are the least in our society who are going to come down here in masses. They're tired. They work today. And it's raining. And they went home. And all they want to do is be left alone. And I just think that you should vote no on this and just put an end to it, because it's going to be a real problem for the city. If you look at the idea that, you know, it can't be on the other side of the park, you know, I just don't understand that at all. A fence could surely keep the cars from interfering. Fences here, fences there. Wow, problem solved. But apparently whoever did this report doesn't want it on that side of the park and has their own reasons. But it's the bottom line is they do need a park, but they need a bigger park, a much bigger park. That's a small area. I mean, you wouldn't put state prisoners in recreation yards that small, 200 feet or so by maybe 51 to 91 feet at its best point. You're going to put 75 dogs in there. It's going to... they're going to be crawling over each other. And I gave you about 50 pages of documentation off the internet where dog owners, dog lovers, people who still have dogs, won't go to the dog park anymore because of their bad experiences. And so it isn't all happy, rosy, you know, we're all happy and it's all good. It's going to be a problem. And I just would like you to vote no on it. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else not representing the dog park?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Bill Walter. I'm at 679 Monterey Street, and I'm a lawyer representing MGF Enterprises, the owner of the 142 apartments in this vicinity. I have prepared a letter, which I gave to you, and would ask that that be made a part of this record. And I don't mean this as a criticism of staff. It's a hard thing to analyze the impacts. It's a hard thing to come up with a mitigation between 8 a.m. And dusk of barking dogs, of noise. And, in fact, the document itself identifies that as a problem. And yet there is no real mitigation for that. So whenever you have a situation under CEQA where a fair argument can be made that a project may have, not will have, may have a significant effect upon the environment, then the law is clear and you have to do an environmental impact report. You have to fully consider the traffic impacts, the conflicts in terms of uses, the parking issues, and the noise problems as issues. And I would suggest that there is enough in this record to demonstrate that and to require that. Now, I think you're best off to give up on this issue at this time. I think it's the wrong location. But if you choose to go forward, I think you have the duty to fully consider all of the possible impacts, to have a baseline data study that says what will the use be, what are the peak hour uses, when will those peak hours actually occur. There's no baseline study that identifies that. There's no baseline study that's adequate in describing the environmental setting in which this project is proposed. So all of those things, I think, combine to require that you look at it carefully. Part of the purposes of going through CEQA is to allow people, sometimes the courts call it an apprehensive citizenry, to be able to identify potential impacts and to reassure them that they have been addressed. Everything I've heard tonight leaves me less assured, actually, in terms of the ability of any of the enforcement mechanisms, the legal status of the entity that's involved, how do you enforce it, how do you assure that these are real mitigations and not a whim or a wish. So when you look through all of those issues, I would respectfully ask that you turn it down and at the very least require further and complete environmental impact report concerning these potential impacts. You're building in something that's going to be a problem. There's going to be people coming here year after year, and there's no reason to open that door. There's no reason, and I think if you studied it carefully, you would certainly come to that conclusion. So I'd ask that all of our materials be incorporated into this record, and I thank you for your attention.
Good. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else not representing Five Cities Dog Park? Okay. Then now we'll invite you to come up.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor and City Councilman, my name is Cynthia Eklund, and I am the president of the Five Cities Dog Park Association. First off, I would like to thank staff for all the work that they put into the staff report. I downloaded it. It's quite impressive. It represents a lot of work. Thank your staff, please. It looks like they went to a lot of trouble to do this for us tonight, or for all of us. I would also like to thank everyone for coming tonight, the dog park supporters in particular. Maybe in the 70s we would have called this a three-dog night. It's inclement outside, and so I do thank everybody. We've been working on a dog park for almost 3 years now, and we're anxiously wondering if we will get one. I would also like to thank the residents of the apartment for coming forward and voicing their concerns. I respect their concerns. I know that the dog park would impact their lives, and they're worried about that, and they'd like to know whether or not this will be an improvement or a detriment. You should know that I love dog parks. I think they're magical. I think they're relaxing. I think they're entertaining. I love them so much that I could go every single day to a dog park. I love them so much that I can tell you with 100% certainty that I would enjoy living next to a dog park. That being so, I can understand why some people wouldn't want to, but I'm sure there are several amongst us who would enjoy having a dog park on the other side of the fence. That's how much we enjoy dog parks. That being said, I don't want to sound like I'm discounting or in any way diminishing the concerns that were voiced tonight. On the contrary, they're all valid concerns, and I will address as many as I can. We talked about apprehensive citizens in those apartments. I think that's a very good description, and I hope I alleviate some of their fears. Also, you talked about the canvassing of the residents. I canvassed the residents that abut the park. I believe there are 8 units there that abut the park, and of those, I talked to all those people and at that owners, and the owners are watching them. The other thing that we can do to alleviate the barking, some of the dog parks use water bottles, and you can squirt the dog, or you can use some sort of shock collar. There are ways to mitigate it. We can also use signage saying that dogs that do excessive barking need to be removed immediately. We can certainly direct our rules towards what the needs are of the residents, and of course, my intention is that we are to be good neighbors and to be talking to them to find out if there's any way we need to tweak the rules if for some reason it seems like there is a noise problem. Personally, I think that children playing in a playground makes more noise than most dog parks. If you go to Waller Park or you go to El Churro, sometimes dogs are barking when they're playing, but a lot of times it's very quiet because the dogs are just sniffing around and walking around or sitting next to the masters. So personally, I believe that the fears that there's a big noise problem, in fact, is not really a noise problem. Appearance. We want an attractive park. We're working very hard to have it designed so it's a beautiful park. We're working with staff to make sure we have an attractive fence, that it'll be landscaped. We'll have rules about picking up the park, for example. If people do not pick up after their dog, they're asked to leave. I mean, we're very adamant that people must follow the rules, and there's a lot of peer pressure. Granted, not all the members are there 24 hours a day, so some people might go in and think that they don't have to follow the rules. That's the reason that we have volunteered to go and have a monitor go at least once a day to walk around the park and pick up anything that people have left behind. But trust me, those of us that go to dog parks are responsible for picking up after our own dogs. If we notice somebody else hasn't picked up after the dog, we are not shy about saying, please pick up after your dog. Did you see? You were talking. You didn't pay any attention. And we always say thank you for noticing. That's generally the way people behave in a dog park. As for the trash receptacles, everybody talked about the smell. If you go to El Churro and you walk right into the front entrance, there is a receptacle right by the front door, and that thing is built so well, you can't smell anything. We are planning on having trash receptacles that are airtight and not anywhere close to where the apartments are. We are very sensitive to that, and we'll make sure that there's no smells whatsoever. Parking. I'm leaving this up to city staff, but I'm quite sure that we'll have enough parking. Usage of dog parks is very sporadic. People don't all come at the same time. They'll come off and on throughout the day. Sometimes they only stay 15 minutes. Sometimes they stay an hour. So they won't all be coming at once, and you certainly won't have thousands of dogs appearing at the same time. If you go to, again, Waller Park or El Churro, sometimes there's no dogs, and other times there might be a dozen or so. The other thing that everybody needs to be aware of is that the responsible dog owner takes a look at the dog park when they arrive. If it looks like there's too many dogs, I can tell you right now, nobody else is going to want to go in because you're putting your dog in a dangerous situation. You're putting yourself in a dangerous situation. Everybody knows too many dogs is a recipe for disaster. Most people are very good about self-policing. Safety. One of the residents here was worried about the dogs coming in and not being on a leash. The rules are the dog must be on a leash until it enters into the double-gated entry. In the double-gated entry is where you take the dog off the leash, and there can only be one dog in the double-gated entry at a time. And then once the dog is inside the gated enclosure, the dog has no leash on it. Anybody who has their dog off-leash outside the dog park, as far as I'm concerned, has broken the rules. So if there's not somebody there to tell them, they certainly are liable for getting a ticket, as far as I'm concerned. And we'll be very strict about that. And as for the pollution of the groundwater, I'll leave that for staff to comment on. But as far as I know, and I've done a lot of research on the Internet as well, whenever any other cities have done any environmental impact reports on dog parks and whether or not there'd be any negative impacts, they've been not able to prove that there's been any negative impacts. And that has to do with the dog urine only, because otherwise, you know, we're picking up the solid stuff. Big events, what to do during that? I'm certainly open to any suggestions. We're very flexible. We're just happy to have a dog park. If the city were to deem that having a big event on Elm Street already has too much traffic, I'm certainly not against you putting up
more time, which we have seen. And if this is part of your presentation, then that's, you know, well and good. But for the rest of you, I do intend to be a little more forceful in terms of the three-minute rule. In fact, I was hoping that maybe you would ask, I'll ask right now the group, how many of you are here representing the Dog Park Association and substantially agree with what Cynthia has said, if I could just have a show of hands. Okay. Now, those of you, thank you. If you substantially agree, then perhaps you'll not need to come up to the podium, because we do have a very full agenda and your representation is noted. But if you would like to invite...
I have a question I'd like to
ask. I do, too. If you'd like to invite the gentleman to come up, then feel free to do so. And then once we listen to his presentation, then we'll have a couple of questions, probably of you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm Pete Jenny. I'm the county parks manager, and I will be brief. I do respect the length of your agenda. I am not here to tell you what you should or should not do. I'm only here to share with you what our experience has been in managing. We now have three dog parks. We're working on a fourth. We've been in the dog park business for 6-7 years now, and I thought it might be helpful to hear a little bit about the experience that we have been through. You heard many of these issues raised, and I'll try to skip through to some of the main points. Noise was a concern from the very beginning with us. In fact, it perhaps was most of a concern when we added a dog park at Napomo Park, immediately adjacent to the library, a shush zone, if you will, if there ever was one. And library staff and docents were very concerned about the noise of barking dogs at play. And our experience at El Choro prior to that, and it's been borne out at our other facilities, is dogs in dog parks are not barking dogs. They play. Cynthia mentioned that children in playgrounds make more noise. That has been our experience. Dogs will occasionally let out a little poop, a little bark. They are not big, racing around like a chained-up dog. They have not been a noise issue for us. Smell, and it's another concern obviously a lot of people have, but we have maintained fairly rigid cleanup standards such as proposed here. Smell is, I have never been aware of any visit to any of our sites, the smell of dog urine or dog feces. And I have a pretty acute nose as an old park ranger who can smell that fire on the horizon. The use of the site came up, and I would just share with you one unexpected bonus that we ran into. With our site at El Choro, we had an emergency evacuation during one of the fires a couple of years ago, and we worked closely with animal regulation and actually made our fenced site an emergency evacuation zone for horses and other large livestock that were evacuated from private residences, and it was very useful to have a penned site that could be used for that purpose. So, yes, you could have some conflicts if you have a large event. You could also find this could be a useful site in emergency preparedness. The use, the flow, the traffic issues. Our experience has been, and we are arguably regional facilities. We have a dog park at Heilman Park. We have one at in Atascadero. We have one at El Choro Park, which is not close to a neighborhood. And we have one in the Pomo, which is within walking distance in Pomo Community Park. Our experience has been it's a kind of a slow and steady rate. Our expectation was borne out in the Pomo where we were closer to residential zones. The vehicle traffic didn't go up. The foot traffic increased. Vehicle traffic has not been an issue for our facilities. In fact, they all have rather limited parking. The issue of CEQA has been raised here. The county's environmental coordinator's office has reviewed each of our facilities when they were proposed, and they were all issued negative declarations. Essentially, what we were doing is saying we've got dogs and people and kids playing in parks today, and that would continue. What we have found is by giving a place where dogs could be located off-leash, it has solved many problems for us because our ranger staff can now direct people who might otherwise let their dog run loose. And even a dog on leash that might be of concern to a visitor, by having a location, that's been helpful. But from an environmental standpoint, it's been the decision of the county's environmental coordinator that that was appropriate to issue negative decks in those cases. And the last but not least, and this is fairly important to us, because we have three adopt-a-parks. We're about to enter into a fourth. And I'm sure you folks have been promised lots of things in the past of what people will perform, as have I. In general, really without hesitation, I would say that the groups we have worked with, the dog parents, have been more reliable and have stuck to what they said more than the soccer parents, the skate park parents, the softball parents, and so forth, and meaning no disrespect to any of those. We have had not one problem of groups doing what they were said they were going to do. They have been some of the most reliable special interest groups that we have dealt with, did what they said and more. And so our experience has been nothing but positive. And I'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay, thank you.
That's the best way you can control the movement of the dogs. So you have the rules so that only one person goes in at a time and you take your one or your two dogs, or however many you're bringing. So the dog is definitely on a leash outside the dog park, inside the staging area, which is generally like, 4 feet by 6 feet. So once the gates are closed, then you take the dog off the leash, and then you open the gate, and then the dog runs out with the other dogs, and then you reverse what you're doing as you're leaving. So that double-gated entry is your safety zone for leashing and unleashing the dog.
Okay, and then my other question, you mentioned it, but could you elaborate a little bit more on the other concern regarding capacity? Because I would imagine by comparison this is a pretty small area. If you were to look at, let's say, the attendance on any given day, are you intending to somehow restrict the capacity if it gets too crowded inside, or how is that going to work?
I wasn't planning on it, but I believe that sounds like a really good idea. To sit down with some people and just say, this is what we think are the maximum number of dogs. This is the first time I've actually thought about a maximum capacity, but I think this is an excellent idea. I think we should come up with a certain number. But I've never been to a dog park that I thought had too many dogs, with one exception, and that was when the Wolf Park in Waller Park was doing their fundraising event, and they put... They did the event in the large dog park area, and so they made anybody who came with their dogs to put both large dogs and small dogs in the small dog park, and that was crazy. I thought that was not a good decision on anybody's part. They should have moved the event to another location because there were too many dogs. But I think, I believe this is a smart idea to have an upper limit.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
Mrs. Eklund, my question is pretty much the same as the mayor's regarding the double gate, because one of the speakers before you mentioned the fact that a dog could escape. I envision you walk in through a gate, you close the gate behind you, you're in a small enclosure, you open the other gate and go in, just
yes.
sort of when you're entering
yes.
a zoo cage with the birds, you don't want the birds to get
out. It's exactly like that.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Okay. Councilmember Arnold?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Over at Costa Bella, size-wise comparable to what we're proposing here, would you say that one was larger than the other? As far as the net use, because I know there was some water retention basin there, and then there was more of the hillside next to the home, so all that park wasn't usable. But as far as the usable size go, how would they compare?
I would say they were quite similar in that because Costa Bella did not have a fence next to Oak Park, everybody tried to stay as close to the opposite side of the park so that their dogs would remain in that area, because everybody panicked if their dogs wandered closer to the streets. And obviously the dogs wanted to, because of the, as people were arriving and they parked there, the dogs wanted to greet them. So I would say in terms of the area that we used, it's probably similar in size to the area that we're getting.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Okay. Any other members of the audience that would like to come forward? Once again, please be mindful of the three-minute rule.
Yeah, I'll be quick. I just wanted to say that I lived in the Fair Oaks Garden Apartments for 2 years, which are right across the street from the apartments that are complaining. And those soccer games were outrageously loud. I strongly doubt that a dog park could even come close to that. And also, I wanted to point out that some of the people that were worried about smell also have small children, and they're changing diapers and storing dirty diapers in that little apartment, you know? So I can't imagine how that would, you know, be any less.
Okay.
So.
Good. Thank you. Anyone else like to come forward very quickly?
I'll make this really quick as well. My name is Lisa Campolmi. I'm the past president of the El Choro Regional Dog Park. I was president for 3 years. I've been working with Five Cities for quite some time consulting, and I just wanted to answer your question a little bit more specifically. Most people that regularly go to the dog park do know that they're sort of a critical mass, 8 to 10 dogs depending on your space, and the dogs actually stop exercising as much. The majority of people will come, they want to bring their chuckets and throw the ball for the dog, and when it gets too crowded, what will happen is people will voluntarily leave. They're done. There's two kinds of dog park visitors. Ones that maybe go and visit with their friends for an hour or two, but the majority will come in, play ball for 20 minutes, and leave. And what we've found that, and I've spent hours and hours out at our, sometimes during fundraisers all day, and there's a very nice cycle where...
I did not choose to live in an apartment that allows dogs. I did not choose to live in an apartment that very close to my own home would have up to 75 dogs visiting on a regular basis. And as for the noise, even if it is very minimal, I'll make a stretch here every 10 to 15 minutes. I understand how rude it would be if I followed through with this and what a disturbance it would be, but if I sat in this meeting and every 10 to 15 minutes barked as loud as I could, I think everyone kind of get the point of how that could disturb what was going on here in this meeting, let alone every day of our life from the time we wake up till evening time when we're cooking dinner. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Make a quick place.
I'd just like to address the county. It's a great deal. I mean, county has great parks, but a library is not a residential facility. And their parks are places where there aren't people. They're laughing because it's really funny to them. And, you know, it is very cool that you can take your dog somewhere. I mean, how exciting. But we're talking about people's lives here. And for every one person that supports this, there's a whole lot more that don't. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. We're going to close the public hearing portion of 9A. And before we start with council comments, does staff want to address anything else that any of the other issues that were brought up?
Well, just a few comments that I have. First, Elm Street Park is still going to be a city park. It's not going to be the Five Cities Dog Park Association's park. It will be a public facility. It will be open to, as it is now, to the general public. The Five Cities Dog Park Association is a volunteer organization. It's agreed to adopt the dog park portion, if it's approved by the city council, to develop the park and all that, and to help with the maintenance, to help with setting rules and things of that sort, but it is still going to be a city of Rio Grande Park. Also, as far as landscaping, we intend, if again approved by the city council, to plant some fast-growing trees along there to create some sort of a barrier, a visual barrier. That's what we're looking at as far as landscaping. Special events, if we do have, say, the egg hunt or the walk-a-thon for the Cancer Society, certainly we would close the park on those days, or we actually would close the dog park on those days because it's just not compatible uses. And, again, the 75 to 80 dogs is the estimate. I don't anticipate all, as they indicated, 75 or 80 dogs being there all at the same time. And those are just my comments.
Okay. Anything else? Did you want to add anything, Steve? Okay, we'll bring it back to the council then. And you raised your hand. I assume you want to go first, Councilmember Guthrie?
I have a question, but I'll go first.
Might as well.
Okay. Let me just first ask a question and ask staff to quickly review why we didn't use the other side of the park. And I know it's in the staff report, but I just wonder if you'd review it for the public.
Well, the other side of the park, the northern end of the park, there's several first of all, it's a more active area of the park. We have the group barbecue areas over there. There's also a single barbecue area for just a walk-on use, not a reservable area. We have soccer classes over there. There are egg hunt and other special events occur in that area of the park. So to put a dog park over there would really inhibit our active uses of the park on that side. The southern end, there's literally no active recreation goes on there, essentially around the retention base, not the retention base, but the pump houses and the southern boundary of the park. In addition, there is access road there, which access for public works to their pumps and also for our parks pump for the water pumps over there and the wells.
Yeah, I think I'll just add to that when you look at the actual park and you were to sort of draw a park out of equal size over there and take the access road out, that would actually start to crowd far more into the rest of the park than it does from this side. With that, I'll step into my comments. Okay, well, first I'll address the environmental impact issues and say that I agree with staff here that I don't think there are – while every single impact isn't perfectly known, it's certainly reasonably known here. I can say that I have some personal experience in having been at the dog park that was over at Oak Park Road, not very often, but certainly the times I was there, noise was certainly not an issue, and neither was the dog feces. So I think that the major concerns that were brought forward in the letter and in the attorney's letter, I think don't apply here. In fact, I would point out that if you really did have that much concern about noise, we would require a full EIR for the installation of a tennis court or certainly the soccer matches. Every single soccer match would require a full EIR or an EIR to cover them as an ongoing deal. So it is a reasonable use. It's reasonably close to the way that the park is used currently. But I'm not going to say it's without impact. I mean, certainly the apartment building next door will have some impacts. I don't think they're going to be nearly as serious as is suggested, and maybe the immediate neighbors of the park. This is an ongoing park. There are many, many dog users in this community, and this is an opportunity that they're I won't say they're unserved, but they're certainly not well served by current facilities. And we have the opportunity here to provide that service. Yes, it's going to have some impacts. I, as expressed before, do have concerns about the parking, and I'm going to address one issue in particular with staff here, but I do have concerns about the parking in particular that I actually think this will get used quite a bit, although I think it will, as noted, will be a walk-to park. There's a lot of people adjacent to this who will be able to walk to this park. My concern about parking has to do with the easy parking is right on the street, and it is, I'll say it's competitive. There's a lot of people trying to use that parking for a lot of uses, including soccer, including the residents, including a number of people. The issue I wanted to address, particularly related to the parking, is independent of the dog park, if the bus is unable to pull to the curb, we need to deal with that. If it's because of the soccer games, if it's because, you know, somebody just happened to take that space, as I remember, that bus stop is we end up losing one parking space if we were to red curb that bus stop because there's a driveway just south of it. So I think that's something we should take a look at independent of the dog park, but that's certainly when we have people unable to board the bus because of parking, whether the dog park's here or not, we need to deal with that. I actually look pretty serious at why we didn't do it on the other side of the park. I think that a lot of the recreational facilities are on the other side of the park because they didn't want to be near the apartment building, but there's also some buildings over there that kind of drove that as well. It would just be relatively difficult to put over because that would solve, I'll say, most of the problems here if we could do that. We could probably reroute the public works access. It would be kind of ugly up by where we just put in our brand new barbecue area with the cover and everything, but it's doable. So it's barely possible to do that, but it wouldn't be as useful a park. But it would have lower impacts. So I'm prepared to go forward tonight and support this. I think we might want to take a formal review that says 1 year after it's open that we actually, direct staff to come back with a report and a public hearing and go ahead and have I think we should do this more often. And we'll have a formal public hearing and we'll reinitiate it, so to speak, once it's open and deal with whatever issues there are at that point. And if we totally blew it and it's totally inappropriate, then it'll be right in our face and we'll need to deal with it at that point. But I'm prepared to support going forward with the park because I do think it's an exceptionally useful recreational item for our public. And while there won't be no impacts, the impacts will be relatively minimal. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be fairly brief. I agree with most of what Councilmember Guthrie has just stated. First, that the dog association is volunteering to do cleanup work and be a participating partner in the park, but it is still a city park. And if there are any complaints about parking or noise or issues, you don't complain to the dog association; you complain to the city, and the city will take action. I think that's something to bear in mind. Also, do note the double gated entryway, and I think that will be used properly. I don't think that people will be double parking to hop out and drop their dog off. That's not the way the park would be used. Some will be parking and leaving the vehicle and not leaving it for a moment or two to drop the dog off and come back to the car. And if they do that, then that's inappropriate, and we do need to deal with that, and I'm sure we will. And I had note to myself here that if the park does not work, I would be more than willing to reconsider the park at some future time. I agree with Mr. Guthrie. I think that let's say a year from now we're going to sit down and we'll examine this. And if we have underestimated the impacts, and there will be some impacts, but if we've underestimated them, if noise is an issue, if cleanliness is an issue and it hasn't been dealt with properly, let's bring it back and by all means we'll deal with it then and close it if need be. I do think we've done an adequate environmental review on the potential impacts here. I can support the negative declaration, and I can support going forward with this tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I can definitely second most everything that's been said tonight. I think the negative deck is complete and appropriate. I don't believe that any of the impacts reach the level of significant. So I think that was the first challenge that we had to get through tonight. One of the concerns that I heard was with the residents almost treating the park as kind of a private park, and it is a very much a public park, and I think the fact that the area that we're talking about right now is actually not very usable for any other use of the park is why this is actually an ideal location for this. The other portions of the park are actually more wide open, and so therefore they're more the dogs don't bark. They're very well behaved. The owners think nothing of confronting someone if they're not cleaning up after their pet. And they're the same people every day. This is not a transient type of park. It's actually a very social. It'd be just like anyone saying, meet me at the coffee house at 8 o'clock. You wouldn't call every day to say that. You show up and you do it. And it's actually an incredibly dynamic interaction between the people and the dogs and stuff. And so I'm very excited that we're going to have one here. I think instead of looking at this isn't the right location, I think we should probably be looking at where can we get more and then we won't have that issue of are we overusing this park, but do we have more? And so then, therefore, more people will actually walk. The parking is going to be an issue, but I think, unfortunately, in a lot of areas, and this is becoming kind of a common theme up here, is to some degree the parking will work itself out. And just like people will not show up and use the park if there's 25 dogs in the pen, they will figure out at a different time. Same thing if they have to drive and they find that this is an inappropriate time to be there because they can't park, they will also find a different time to be there. So I think all those issues are going to work themselves out pretty well. I agree with Councilman Guthrie that we should probably be looking at red curbing the bus stop here. I do not want to see this, and I don't want to see any use impeding the ability of the bus stop to be used, and especially since we do have a lot of people that are living in apartments and potentially using the mass transit, I think we want to encourage that use. So we definitely don't want to be impeding that. Some of the other things that I heard tonight, septic system, the issue of potentially the urine leaching into the ground. Septic systems use the earth as a natural filter to break down the liquids, and so I'm not concerned about that. Ironically, the prevailing winds, if there were even odors here, which I don't believe there will be, actually blow away from the apartments as well. So I think it's an appropriate use. I think that when it's in, we will actually find out that there was a lot of concern about nothing, that these will actually probably be better neighbors than if we were to put in a swing set next to it. And so I can definitely support this. I am not as concerned about a look back. I think that we can look back if we need to. If we start to see a lot of complaints on the park, I have no problem bringing it back. But my personal feeling is we're going to not need to. And so unless we want to have staff do a report to know what I think we're going to know, then fine. But otherwise, if we have problems, then we can bring it back anyway. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wouldn't deny a dog park based on the nightmare scenarios we've seen here, because you never really know if it's going to be like that. I wouldn't approve a park based on a dog park based on the dog lover's promises. So I need to rely on my own personal experiences with dog parks and with our expert witness, Mr. Jenny. My experience with dog parks are a couple dog parks in San Diego that I used to visit with my daughter and her dog. The first time I went there, it's an unfenced medium-sized dog park in the middle of Balboa Park in the center of the city. It's the first time I went there, I was amazed at the discipline of the dog owners, who would actually stop talking to another dog owner, put a mutt mitt on, and go over, pick up a pile of solids, and put them in a trash can. I've done that once, and I'll never do it again, but they're just as diligent as can be. It was amazing. And the dogs, there was no noise problem that I could perceive, even if it were close to residences where it's not there, even though there's another park not too far away that is right in the, very similar to the situation here. The smell, the smell wasn't a problem. The solids were gone almost instantly. The mitigated neg deck, I've been suspicious of those in the past. I looked this over very carefully. I think it's done very well, and it's accurate. That 900, the owners of those 1,900 dogs in the city is what I'd call an unserved segment. In this park, this little bit of a park will serve those folks where there is no park like that anywhere close by. Just the last thing I want to mention is the fact that I've seen dog parks are great for exercising dogs. Their owners get some exercise, and it's a great social place, too. So I can support the dog park. I listen to all the testimony of the folks that are opposed and the folks that are for it, and I take that into account. One of the things that I was looking for, rather than nightmare scenarios or promises of how nice that the dog owners will be, is something in Mr. Walter's letter, the attorney's letter, and I certainly appreciate having that. I was looking for something that dealt with dogs in this whole, all of this printed matter about CEQA. And one is an example, finally found one, example from case law, and that's about a dog park that apparently was not fenced, and the dogs ran wild, and it wasn't policed. So I'm convinced that...
Well, and so from a behavioral standpoint, we could empathize
But one thing that I did notice was that in the mornings, and generally it was early in the morning because of the heat, they would take the dog to the dog park. And so I went along once and just had a chance to observe it. And it wasn't too much bigger than I think what we're proposing here. But the first thing that struck me was the design of it and the fact that it was very pleasing to the eye, the way they had the fence and the refuse containers, and everything seemed to be in good order. But I think from an operational standpoint, I did see a lot of attention given not only to the dogs but between the owners, and there was a much higher level of observation of what needed to be observed during the course of their stay at this facility. And so it struck me that there was a much higher degree of responsibility and accountability for the individual dog owners. But the other thing was that when we went back home, the beagle's name was Bailey, and walked in the door, there was such a marked difference in the behavior of the dog. There was much less barking, and I'm assuming that when they have a chance to exercise and when they have a chance to interact, spend some time, socialize, they come back, there's a certain degree, I'm guessing now, but there's a certain degree of relief and pacification for the dog that helps them not bark so much. So the barking dog complaints tended to be minimized, and that's essentially what I was hearing back from many of the owners and the residents at this planned unit development. There have been other related issues where we have had facilities going in next to residential, and there has always been some degree of, hesitation on the part of the residents, simply because of the unknown factor. And I can empathize with that, and I listen to all of the presentations of those who live adjacent to or manage those residents next to where this is going in. And I understand that the fear factor, the unknown, looms large. And especially if you've had no contact or no experience with the type of facility that's going in. But when you do go back a short time later, you realize that one of two things has happened. Either there's been a small adjustment made on the part of the party that was concerned. They've learned to live with it. The impacts aren't nearly as severe as was thought. And so there's a fit. There's sort of an integration of the residents and their concerns and the new facility coming in, and so the impacts tended to be much less. So in terms of monitoring this situation, I'm listening to my colleagues here talk about, well, let's come back in a year. Let's have it be complaint driven, and I'm thinking that probably we should play it by ear. My own sense is that from here on, from this point forward, as we begin to construct the site, and as it begins to be utilized, I'm assuming Doug, this is going to land squarely on your shoulders. But I think the lines of communication need to be established now, not just with Five Cities Dog Park Association, but the lines of communication with the residents of the apartment and Mr. Mundahl, and there needs to be that openness and willingness to communicate, so that if there are issues, if there are questions, they don't continue to build. We address them right away. And as was pointed out by my colleagues, we have a responsibility, not the Five Cities Dog Park Association. We have a responsibility, if we're going to take on this endeavor, to monitor and to mitigate as the need arises. So if that's done, then I think after a period of time, a year or 6 months from the time of opening, rather than make it a public hearing, I would much rather it be some form of a progress report. If it turns out that we've misjudged this tremendously, and there are, with those comments, I can move forward with this tonight as long as we, again, embody the oversight and the monitoring, and we keep those lines of communication open between all of the parties. Would anybody else like to add something?
Yes, I'd like to make an additional comment. The reason that I push the idea of a public hearing is the noticing. Yeah, I'm sure that we will have communications, but I do think that the advantage of a public hearing is that we do in fact notice that in fact the apartment owner, not necessarily the residents, but the ownership would at least be noticed, and that we would have some sort of notice. I don't know if we can, you know, require that as part of the report, but the reason that and that's why I say it's something we should use more often is that the problem with a lot of these reports is they end up in the consent agenda. And yeah, they're good reports, and they may very well be that there's no issues. But if we haven't noticed people, then in fact they don't have the opportunity to say, well, wait a minute, yeah, there really is an issue, but I got tired of saying it. So that would be. I'm not particularly attached to that idea, but I do think that's why I'm suggesting it, is that we really do want to see public notice if we think there's potentially a problem. And I think it has been expressed that there is potentially a problem.
Okay. Well, I can live with it either way. I don't know. How let me check in with the rest of the council. How do you feel about a public hearing and the review process?
I like his rationale behind the public hearing. Sounds good to me.
The noticing aspect?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I could live with if we produce a report if the report was sent to the owner of the apartment complex. I mean, I'm not going to vote no on this, no matter what our noticing or hearing in a year standpoint. But
okay.
Well, you know, actually, in this case, I think that's a good suggestion. Do we have to include that in the motion, or would that just be a direction that in fact, that there'll be a report produced a year after the dog park is officially open, and that we'll definitely know that we'll send copies of that report, I would say, to every resident of the apartment building. It's 20 copies of what I expect to be a two-page report.
It would be helpful to go ahead and have that in the motion. It makes it easier for our records. But I wanted to also follow up on the mayor's comments. I can assure you staff will initiate some efforts to have some regular communication, because certainly if there are problems, we don't want to wait a whole year to resolve them. And so we'll be monitoring it closely.
I wasn't discounting that. I think my point was that if, in fact, we think they're resolved and they're not, then the residents need to have the opportunity to know that we're reconsidering it. So.
Well, since you have a couple of different thoughts, how about if you pull them all together in a motion?
I'm going to try to do this. This is my motion test, which I haven't been passing lately. All right. I'll move for the adoption of a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adopting a mitigated negative declaration designating a portion of Elm Street Park as an off-leash pet area for the use as a dog park, approval of an adopt-a-park agreement with the Five Cities Dog Park Association, and authorization for the city manager to approve and make minor changes and modifications and to execute the agreement. And I'll include in that, I guess, a whereas that would include that a year from the opening of the park that we would produce a report and copy the residents of the apartment building at 400 Elm Street.
Second.
Can we also add that the property owner as well be noticed?
The property owner of 400 Elm Street as well as the residents of 400 Elm Street.
I can second. Oh, you already got a second, so.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and it looks like we have some comments.
I didn't hear the public hearing portion of that. Did you want to include a specific?
No, at this point, it's just going to be that we will mail notice. We'll mail copies of the reports. I'm not pushing for a public hearing. Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and we had the beginnings of a discussion. Any discussion? Okay, roll call.
Excuse me. Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor or Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. While we're waiting for the chambers to clear so we can get on with our second public hearing, council will take a quick 7-minute break. But thorough overview of this proposed business improvement district. And just to let you know, there are two representatives from the Visitors and Conference Bureau that could fill in any gaps that I may leave here tonight. So this is a proposal for the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau to form a business improvement district within the county of San Luis Obispo and any participating cities to promote the county as a regional destination for travelers throughout California and the United States and the world. Funds to do this marketing would come from assessing hoteliers 1% of the rent charge per room per night. And if the cities in the county that look like they will participate follow through, it's estimated that there could be $1.3 million used towards this marketing of the county. On the screen behind me is a table of the entities that are considering participating, the county, the city of Morro Bay, city of Atascadero, and the city of Rio Grande tonight. And you could see various funds from the 1% of the room fees collected, government funding, that's funding from cities in the county towards VCB and their work, and also other non-membership lodging. And you can see it's a decent sum of money for marketing. Funds from this assessment can only be used to defray the costs and services, activities, and programs promoting tourism, which will benefit the operators of hotels in the district through promotion of scenic, recreational, cultural, and other attractions in the district. And the key is, if you're not in the district, you can't be advertised or any destination within your city as part of this fund. So it tends to be a collective effort. If you're in, you get some advertising out of it. Since it is money that's paid for through this assessment on hoteliers, part of the ordinance is to create an advisory board made up of hoteliers that would figure out the budget, make recommendations on how to spend the money and a marketing plan. And right now it's the ordinance says that the advisory board would be made up of at least 5 members from the hotel industry. So these are hotel owners or their representatives, 3 members from the unincorporated area, and 1 member from each participating city. The members would be appointed by the County Board of Supervisors. And as I mentioned, the advisory board would be charged with recommending the BID budget and business plan. Formation of business improvement districts are done through various state laws. This one will be formed under the 1989 Parking and Business Improvement Area Law. This allows businesses the ability to raise funds for specified purposes that will benefit those assessed. There's a multiple-step process. The first step, the county has already adopted a resolution requesting cities to figure out if they want to participate with this or not. The second step is cities can consider whether or not to grant the permission to form the BID within their city limits. This is the process that we're doing tonight. Lastly, the county will hold a public hearing to consider adopting an ordinance creating the BID. At that hearing, that's where those assessed, the hoteliers, would be able to have a protest vote if they do not want this to happen.
The protest vote, a successful protest vote, would consist of objection from a proportionate majority of affected parties based upon those paying 50% or more of the proposed assessment. Under public notice, staff attempted to meet with the management or owners of every hotel in the city. Had pretty good luck going out and talking with them. If I couldn't reach them, I left a memo and also an ordinance explaining the proposal. My contact with them was meant only to elicit whether or not they've heard about this. Do they support it? Are they opposed to it? I wasn't trying to advocate a position at all. In addition, when I talked with them, I reminded them that this public hearing was coming up tonight. We also mailed notices to all the hoteliers. My basic assessment of who is for or against is shown in this table behind me. It looks like four businesses were for it, two were against, three were neutral, and one did not respond to my inquiries. We also listed the number of language allows the City Council to pass a resolution at any time removing its consent for the BID to operate within the city limits. So if after any time during the first year or every year after, if the council or the hoteliers in the city feel that this is not working or their voice is not being heard on this advisory board, that the City Council could pass a resolution, withdraw, and at the end of that yearly cycle, there would be no more fees collected. There are disadvantages, too, and these were things that I was trying to elicit from the hoteliers. Many hoteliers in the city were very frank, and they said that you know, some of their customers complain already about the 10% TOT. They're not used to seeing that that fee put on their bill, and that 1%, an additional 1%, would be make them less competitive or hear more complaints from customers. And another disadvantage is because of the few numbers of hotels compared to the large number of hotels in the county. If the council tonight grants permission to form in this city, when it goes to the protest vote, really the hoteliers in the city of Arroyo Grande doesn't have much of a voting pull in this protest vote. With that, I'm going to go right to the recommendation, and it's quite a lengthy one. I'm going to read it right off here. It's recommended that council adopt a resolution granting the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors the ability to create the San Luis Obispo County Tourism Business Improvement District within the boundaries of the city of Arroyo Grande, and two, to grant the San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors jurisdictions for all the purposes in connection with the creation and operation of the proposed San Luis Obispo Tourism Business Improvement District with input from the affected lodging businesses and participating cities. I can answer questions, and I'm sure the city attorney will answer any legal ones. That concludes my staff report.
Questions, Councilmember Arnold, and then Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do have a couple. On page 3, there's, the reference about the fact that unless you participate, if a city doesn't participate, they don't get any advertising in this. And I guess the question is, the way I look at this is right now it appears that every city except for Pismo is currently participating in the Visitors Conference Bureau. But the way I also look at it is that Paso, Grover Beach, and SLO would not be participating in the new BID. So I guess what is the financial impact to the Conference Bureau since they're going to lose? I would assume out of those, the only one that's – well, actually, there's really two. Paso and San Luis Obispo are probably some serious contributors. And that may be a question for you guys. So that's one question, and if we don't know them when they come up. Then the next question is Pismo's TOT currently, is it the same as ours, or are they – and then I guess in this – I mean, all my questions may be directed over here, and I'll just get them out of the way. And then I guess – because it appears they're going to be doing their own BID as well,
internally, so would they stay the same as ours? I guess what I'm making sure is that we're going to stay competitive with the biggest hotel city adjacent to us. And then the last question that I had is, while it, from what you said, and you clarified it, I believe, pretty well, while our individual hotels would have almost no strength to get out of this, the fact that the ordinance allows for the city council to remove us from here, and at least my personal belief is I wouldn't be voting for this if the hotels were not in favor of this. If all the hotels or the majority of the hotels or rooms got together and said we want out of this, we could do for them what they couldn't do for themselves. That, I think, is a question you can answer.
That's correct, and that's the way that I believe the ordinance is written, and is that there is this clause, and it's a pretty important clause, and at any time the council can say we want out of this, and it does serve to give a voice to the local hoteliers.
Okay, so I'll just wait till they come up and answer the other questions. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
I was just curious as to whether or not there was any kind of reaction from any existing business improvement districts throughout the state. I saw a lot of them listed here. Have we had any feedback, any kind of positive, negative reports?
I don't have personal knowledge of it. Johnny certainly has been doing a lot of research.
Well, they can answer it when they get to it.
Okay. Sorry about that, Councilman Costello.
Thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie, and then Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, I actually had a similar question to Ed's, and this has to do with, and maybe you guys are going to have to answer this too, but if the city is contributing, the cities that aren't that very first year, but that they couldn't vote themselves out later. Now, I have to admit, that seems a bit incongruous, but that was my understanding from the beginning, so you can explain that to me too. But we do have the ability to, like you say, do for them what they can't do for themselves, and we don't have anyone here tonight either way. But thanks. Those are my two questions anyway.
Okay. Turns out that my question's probably more of a comment, so I'll wait a minute.
So you're going to wait?
I'm going to wait.
Okay. Jim, I need a little bit of help with the matrix on page 7. Just want to make sure I have that I understand this right. The first line is the businesses, and I understand the for, against, neutral, no response. The row beneath businesses, does that represent a composite number of rooms for each of those categories?
That's correct. So under the four category, it's four businesses that total 139 rooms.
Okay. So we have two against. Those are two individual businesses with a total of 11 rooms.
That's correct.
And then the neutral, who pretty much said, we don't care one way or the other. Was that the response?
Yeah, so neutral ranged from, it's 10% already, 11 might be tough, but I'll just go along with what the majority wants, too. I haven't studied this. I just don't want to deal with it. I mean, to me, wasn't a clear yes, wasn't a clear no. That's generally the neutral. The fors and against were clearly, I'm for this, and no, I'm not for this. And the no response is the multiple contacts to one entity, and they just never called me back.
And that one entity represents 114 rooms?
That's right.
Okay. Let me ask about the nature of the contact. Did you have some kind of a handout or something that kind of summarized this in lay terms so that they clearly understood what they were getting into or not?
So I came out with one, the ordinance, which is clearly legalese, and it would take quite some time to read that over and over again to understand it. But then also there's a website that was created by the Visitors and Conference Bureau, and I told them that. I go, this is kind of gives you an overview of it, but it is produced by the entity that is really spearheading this effort. But it did have frequently asked questions, and it very, very clearly showed what the project was or what the proposal is. Most of the hoteliers, had heard of it, or they briefly heard of it, but it wasn't something that seemed to be on their top of their list, or something that really got them fired up either way, yes or no. So, okay.
All right, those are all of my questions. This would be a good time, I think, Johnny, for you to come up and maybe give your presentation, and mindful of the questions that were asked, and maybe you'll cover those too.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council Members. I'm Johnny Biagini, Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau. And I am not going to do a full-blown presentation for you. I think Jim's report was extensive, and I thank him for being very diligent about covering all the bases. A few points, though, that I did want to make before I try and answer all your questions is this business improvement district effort has actually been going on for 3 years now. It has been a labor-intensive effort to get all of the hoteliers in this county to know what this project is, what the proposal is, what it will do for them, and what we have found countywide is the same kind of results that your staff found in contacting the hotels. Some of them are adamantly opposed, very few. Some are absolutely in favor of it because they know what's coming down the pike, and there are so many that just either don't respond or don't care, either way. The Business Improvement District law is set up to be renewed annually. That is the beauty of it from the hoteliers and from your point of view. When the city of those areas, and they have the funds and the resources to do it. Our current budget is $876,000. It doesn't go as far as $4.7 million. Sonoma County, a county that is more similar to ours than any other. Same attributes, same rural destinations. Many, many cities make up that destination. They established a BID 3 years ago and have a $4.2 million budget. Sacramento, there have been, I guess, the way that we look at the success of these BIDs is that they continue to be renewed. The hoteliers are not protesting them on an annual basis. And they are all set up the same way. On an annual renewal date, they must decide to go forward. The question was, one of the questions was, the cities that aren't part of the business improvement district on this first go-around, what happens to their contributions to the Visitors and Conference Bureau? As much as we would like to take it, we wouldn't even ask for it, because the way the BID is set up, the law says we have to provide special benefit. We have to show special benefit to those hotels paying in. So conversely, we cannot show the same benefit to those who don't. Our board of directors has determined that as of July 1, if this BID is approved by the county and all of the hoteliers, and there is not a protest vote, and the BID goes through with the jurisdictions that we have on board right now, our board of directors has said we will not allow memberships from the businesses in the cities that are not part of the BID, and therefore the cities will not be contributing their funds to be promoted by the BID funds. We will become, in essence, the boundaries of the BID so that we can show that special benefit. The success of the other BIDs, I think I mentioned, and I think there was a question about how to tally the votes of the hoteliers in the city limits of Arroyo Grande. Again, if they come to you, if a majority of them come to you and within the year and say, we don't want to be part of this, you can definitely say, then we will pull out at the annual renewal date. Was there some other questions?
Well, the one I had asked was whether or not, how does your budget, I guess, reflect, because you're going to be losing these cities?
Well, we currently have an $860,000, $70,000 budget. We will go to a $1.3 million budget with 85% of that budget going towards marketing programs. $1.3 million is not 4.7, but it certainly is a whole lot more than we've got now. And we really think that we will show success in that first year. And success breeds success. And there are efforts. There are ways for the other cities who are not coming on board in this initial push to join our efforts within the year, before that annual renewal date. For instance, they could establish their own BID in the city and allocate 1% to the county BID efforts. So in essence, it'd be the reverse of what we're doing here, which we are hoping that will come to fruition.
After the first year, could a city that's not part of this BID, could they then join it at a later date if their city chose to?
They would join at the anniversary date. That would be the simplest.
Okay, and make sure I got this straight. We contribute how much on an annual basis to the VCB?
$11,666.
Okay, if we become part of the countywide BID, did I understand you to say that we no longer pay that $11,000?
No. This is not... No. This is not meant to be a replacement for public sector funds. This is an ultra-enhancement to public sector funds.
Okay, so...
It's the non-participating BID cities that we would not get their contributions.
Okay. All right, so I guess I was a little bit I was going back to a comment that Councilmember Guthrie mentioned. You know, we pay our public funds going in now, a portion of that, there's an expectation that a portion of that would be used for the advertising that you folks have been doing.
Right.
So if we start with a BID, how much of that contribution is going to be continued to be used for advertising?
It will all go into the same marketing fund, and your dollars will be multiplied in impact.
Itemed. Mm-hmm. And then there was a second line item that said tourism fee. I'm assuming that's
exactly what it would be like here.
Okay.
Keep in mind that this business assessment is actually on the business owner. The business owner, by law, has to pay this assessment. They can pass it on to the guest. They don't have to, but they can. And in 99% of the BIDs, they do. There has been little to no rate resistance. And we're proposing 1%. Sonoma County is at 2%. Others have a dollar or $1.50 per day. There has been little or no rate resistance. So, yes, there would be a separate line item on the checkout folio.
Okay. Yeah, I must admit there was a bit of sticker shock when I did look at the invoice, because $129 room automatically became $147 or something close to that. The other issue, and I don't know if you've experienced this at a level where it does have impact. I know that they were attempting to do something about, in fact, I think there was some form of a class action or some kind of a lawsuit against the online travel companies where you pay in advance at a certain rate, and that rate did not include taxes, and in fact, it was non-refundable. Your credit card was charged online, and when you got to the hotel, they took your credit card for incidentals, but that's it, and you never got an invoice. And what was happening was that they weren't charging TOT, and they weren't charging tourism fees. It was the rate that you got on the Internet. So I don't know if that's still going on or if they have cracked down on some of those travel sites, or Has that been an impact for you guys?
It has not been an issue here. Perhaps a hotelier would be best to answer that question. And
what was the difference in rate, Tommy? The hotels were paying, when Expedia does a room, it's a wholesale room, it's discounted. So the hotel sells the room to Expedia for $100. They collect the $10 tax, and Expedia paid the $10. But Expedia was collecting tax on $150 and keeping the $5. So they didn't even have the opportunity to return to the city, but they also pocketed extra money, and that was the basis of the suit was that the room was being sold for $150, but the city was only getting getting credit for the wholesale price, and sometimes there are huge discounts, so that was what that suit was about. Okay. So the city was getting some tax and would get some tourism fee, but they wouldn't be getting the full rate, and since it was competing with rooms that were in fact paying the full rate to the city was losing out, and they wanted the difference.
Okay. All right.
Did I answer a question?
Yeah. Anyone else have?
I have a kind of technical question along those lines. And this has to do with the bed tax, TOT tax, is federal employees are exempt, and as are 30-day stay employees.
Right.
Would they be exempt from this as well?
Yes.
And would so then the hotel operator would also be exempt? Because interestingly here, this is what bothers me about this. How is an assessment on the hotel operator, if he's actually responsible for it, just the fact that he can't pass it through is enough to relieve him of that responsibility?
From my understanding, the assessment will be charged on the same criteria that the transient occupancy tax is charged. So if it's an exempt employee or government person, and in our ordinance it does say over 30 days, the assessment is not charged.
And in the ordinance it clearly says so. Okay.
Yes.
And do you know our state employees? Because that's actually been a controversial deal, whether state employees are exempt.
In this county, they are not exempt.
So state employees would not be exempt from the tourism fee as well?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, but I'm assuming that most hotels would maintain a file or some sort of documentation, tax-exempt forms, that the state employee or federal employee or whoever it is.
Same thing that they do now, yeah.
You keep them, those forms, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this is not a public hearing. If there is anyone else who would like to come forward on this item, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay. Seeing no one, we'll close public comment on this item. Jeez. I did it again. This is a public hearing. It's just that we're doing it late in the evening. But
it's money to be spent properly and against increases in the bed tax. In fact, I suggested some time ago that Pismo do this just so we didn't have to beg city council for the money anymore. But I did find two things tonight, by the way, that I just found a little bit concerned. One is that since the protest, the very first year, our hotels will not have the opportunity to protest out. Now, they're not here saying anything, but once presented with it, they actually cannot protest out. It was my understanding that I was kind of, I'm going to say, abdicating that to them, that if they felt this wasn't in their interest, that they had a formal opportunity to vote it down. And apparently they're not going to have that. I thought that they did, but the way that it was explained tonight, and if you can explain it differently, Johnny, that would be great.
Well, they definitely have an opportunity to protest.
Oh, no, protest. I understand.
It's just that the total is the entire district, and so their amount would probably not equal 50% of the total county.
Oh, I understand that. Okay, so, yeah. So, I mean, clearly, if every hotel in Arroyo Grande could protest this, they'd still be paying it for 1 year. So that concerns me a little bit, not hugely. If there's not even one of them showing up tonight and I haven't heard from one of them, I'm sure they're good for a year. Mm-hmm. The other thing that surprised me here is my understanding was that essentially one of the advantage of this for a hotel operator, and this is still having with my hotel hat on, is that the hotels controlled it. Now, they can vote it out, but actually the board isn't even half hotels. When you do the math here, it's got every city has a representative, 3 people from the unincorporated and 5 hotels, was the way I read the report. Okay? You can correct me there.
Excuse me. Just a little correction. There, by law, there has to be an advisory board, and the advisory board is all lodging.
Okay.
And now the Visitors and Conference Bureau Board is still a Visitors and Conference Bureau Board made up of a variety of hotels and restaurants and other attractions. But the advisory board is the one who will have the final say on how that budget is spent. They're all lodging.
Okay. All right. I'm glad you clarified that, because that was the way I understood it years ago, but I understood a couple other things wrong as well. And this is a good thing for hotels, frankly. I mean, clearly it's a competitive situation for hotels in Rio Grande. This is a really sweet deal. They get in for $46,000, and they have some influence on spending $1.3 million. How much influence depends on how hard they want to work at it. So for hotels, this is a really good deal, and as you said, it is very competitive out there. I doubt that they'll see resistance, which kind of segues into my little rant that I'm going to go into here on these kinds of things. The reason that there's no resistance is because the public perceives this as a tax. They perceive this as you and I voting a tax on them, when in reality, the hotels are voting this tax on them. I mean, this is a really sweet deal if you think about it, that as an industry, you get to create this tax and pass it straight through, and people pay it as if it was any tax, but it's actually totally for your benefit. If we could only do that, you know. But so that's, yeah, that's it. I mean, it's similar to the TOT, but it's actually different than the TOT. The TOT at least has a fig leaf of coverage. It goes into the general fund, and the guests, at least to some extent, enjoy the benefit that they have the police, they have the fire, they have the emergency services, they drive on the roads. So it may be disproportional, although in Arroyo Grande it's probably not, but it may be disproportional, but at least they have some benefit. In this, it's actually a disbenefit. The goal of the improvement district is to increase demand, which would raise rates. So they're actually paying to make hotel rates higher. So that's the problem I have here with this in general. On the other hand, you got to do what you got to do. This has to take, I don't say it has to take place, but these kinds of things have to take place, frankly, until somebody stops them. And I don't see us denying our hotels the opportunity to use this tool as long as everybody else is using it. So I got to have my rant there, but I can support going forward with it this evening.
Okay, well, thank you for the rant. It was good background. Mayor Pro Tem?
No rant here. It's obvious to me that this BID is necessary and we have to compete. I certainly hope that in the future, if all of the 5 cities got together on this, we can beat the places like Monterey all the heck, because we have a village. And please, in the future, refer to it as Arroyo Grande's charming historic village, not downtown. Because if you're advertising to L.A. people, you're talking smog, skyscrapers, crime. We don't have that here. We have a charming historic village. The one misgiving I have is that you stood at the podium and said that the businesses must pay this, and they don't. They add it onto the TOT, and the customers pay it. So they're not really making a contribution at all, but that's the way it is, I guess. So I can support this.
Okay. Well, they have an option, as I understood it. Actions that we take, this is one that we have an opportunity to monitor closely and look at its success or lack thereof and make a determination after a reasonable amount of time. And that's structured in as 1 year. So I can support this evening. And with that, I'll entertain a motion if there's no other comments.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande granting consent to the County of San Luis Obispo to form the San Luis Obispo County Tourism Business Improvement District, the Slow CT Bid.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All right. Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Johnny.
Councilmember Costello? I think there was a second component to that. I'm not sure. I wasn't paying close enough attention as you read it verbatim.
I think that those two actions are included in that.
Was there a second motion there?
I didn't see a second one, actually. I looked.
She's right. It's all included in the resolution.
Okay. Is there a fine structured in for that spontaneous outburst on the part of the
just double checking. My conservative.
Oh, okay.
I turned to the manager first and I said, I think they didn't include it, and he gave me a blank stare.
No. That's what happens when he misses a meeting.
Yeah, I think it's jet lag.
But I'll voluntarily contribute $5 to that.
I think he's back in Europe still. All right, that takes us to continued business, item 10. We have none this evening. Make sure I get that straight. We're no longer dealing with public hearings. And then we'll move to item 11, new business. 11A is consideration of agricultural buffer policies, including the minimum buffer distance, land uses, landscape standards, so on and so forth. Good evening, Rob.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. This is in basic response to a request of August 2007, and the staff report includes a reference to and attachment one, which is the 2003 agricultural report. Some confusion as to that being attached, but I wanted to make sure you're fully aware of the content of that report. As a part of that report, there was consideration of alternative buffer distances. 100, 200, and 300 foot buffers were considered. Depending upon the size of the buffer, the number of properties that would become nonconforming were identified in the report. The ultimate outcome of the agricultural report studies dealt with a minimum of 100 feet buffer, which created 95 nonconforming properties. These were residences pre-existing within the buffer distance. And the buffer distance was then established as a development code amendment with proper advertising involving more than 600 notices and public hearing process that's outlined on pages 2 and 3. There were some subsequent refinements in 2004 where the interpretation of the buffer was discussed and resolved at the council level in terms of what uses should be permitted within the buffer and what types of flexibility should exist within the landscape setback. And again, I'd emphasize that it's a minimum 100 feet, a greater buffer distance is encouraged. And in fact, as you're aware, in the cases that have come forward adjacent to agricultural properties, a greater distance has generally been applied. 130 feet is the buffer that was established in the case of the Cherry Creek development, as an example. As a part of the previous 2003 study, there was a study of other jurisdictions. We updated that study as requested in August of 2007, and that's attachment two. There are more jurisdictions now using the agricultural buffer. They are still highly variable. Most of them are not specific distance element update this year. Reopening overall the ag buffer ordinances, however, would be a unanticipated work concern. I do have some examples of vegetative buffers design standards from the Queensland study. There are some similar studies that can be used to help refine design guidelines and standards, but I'm basically looking to the council for direction in terms of what the issue might be and what response the staff would need to make. with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Okay. Questions for Rob? No? You do? Go ahead.
Yeah, Rob, in your review of ordinances and things that have come to light since we did our work, do any of them deal at all? I mean, one of the processes we saw was the, you know, the actual design of the vegetated buffer for the one project that we did. And did any of the other jurisdictions actually have any guidelines or anything for what that vegetative buffer was made up of, or given any kind of guidance to projects that may be coming forward that require, or were they doing it all purely on a one-off basis?
I would say in terms of the attachment 2, which is the summary of jurisdictions that have responded, Davis has some specific discussion of where public uses such as trails could be located within an ag buffer. Otherwise, they're looking for a combination of space and vegetation. Outside of the United States, the Queensland report and some of the Australian guidelines are the most sophisticated in terms of trying to provide for a criteria by which vegetative buffers would be measured. Arroyo Grande, in one specific instance with the non-conforming lot processed by Tony Janowitz on adjacent to Cherry, dealt with some recommendations from a landscape design professional dealing with the porosity and the size of the trees and the thickness of the trees and the vegetation of shrubs and trees. Most jurisdictions find it best to leave it vague to the extent that a specific case-by-case study, depending upon the types of crops that are adjacent and the activities that are apt to occur. I think to some degree the standards that are set in jurisdictions such as Queensland, where they deal with pesticide drift, theoretically that shouldn't happen in the United States. Pesticide drift is not supposed to leave the agricultural property. So some of those criteria would be not applicable to us, but I think the principle of separation of dust and noise and smells and trespass and things of that nature can be translated into landscape standards, and a fence and a hedge and tree rows and distance are the principal means by which that's done. And then every jurisdiction, I think, has a different set of native plants and different set of soils conditions, so it's pretty hard to prescribe that thou shalt use these particular trees and these particular shrubs. But I do feel that we could include some more explicit criteria as a part of landscape design standards, and that was our intent.
Okay. Any other questions of the staff report?
I have one.
Well, I'm going to give it over to you anyway. Mayor Pro Tem, you're the one who brought this agenda, right. So I'm going to let you go ahead and kick it off. I'm assuming there's no public input on this item at this time. So why don't you go ahead and kick it off?
Thank you.
And
Rob, first I have a question on page 35 of the staff report. I think this must have been a reprint from an earlier staff report, maybe from 03. Page 35 states, while you're finding it, the highlighted part I have is there have been very few scientific studies that have looked at the effectiveness of buffer distances. And then someone has written that a major study by two respected researchers, Sokolow and Varia Hammond, is currently underway, and you and I talked about this earlier today.
Yes.
Seeks to accomplish two goals: evaluate existing city and county ag buffer policies and their implementation and work that Rob's gone through to give us that report, and I'm sure it'll be useful. What I specifically wanted to discuss down the road, whenever, was the possible modification of the makeup of a buffer, whether it's 100 feet, 130 feet, 150 feet, or 200 feet. I think the community would benefit from a little bit, a guide on the structure of it, the plants that could go in there in order to perform the job that it's supposed to do. And I think there's got to be some up-to-date information beyond the Queensland report, which is a good report. So my idea was that we, in my opinion, we fell short on the South Elm residential project, where we really didn't dictate any sort of a buffer. And a proposed remodel addition to a home on Coach Road, where I'm told the applicant was okay with the idea of a buffer, and the Planning Commission said you should have a buffer, but they kind of shrugged their shoulders when the person asked, well, what's it going to look like? So, and that's what I had in mind, just coming up with some information about that. Maybe we could clarify our buffer, not the size of it, and not unwrap the whole thing, but just talk about that. Looking at the staff report, I was reminded that of a couple of things. It was mentioned many times, I think, during the hearings on buffers back in 2003, that a LISA model that fits this city would be a good idea. So I mentioned that to Rob, and he asked me to – he said we need to discuss that a little bit further at length, because perhaps that would be difficult. But many people, planning commissioners at the time, said the LISA model that we're trying to use didn't work. And so, again, I'd like to sort of add that to what we might discuss after staff looks into it a little bit further. And the other one small thing was, as I was reading the staff report, Ordinance 550 has a little phrase regarding limited commercial uses within the ag buffer, and I'd like some clarification on that. But I'm perfectly all right. In fact, I was strongly in favor of one of the alternatives, as staff mentioned. Certainly not reopening the entire issue. We don't have the staff time. We have budget constraints to think about. I don't think we need to do that. We don't need to send out a million notices and so on. The alternatives talk about, or number two, instruct staff to include additional ag buffer analysis and alternatives as part of the update to the ag conservation open space element update later this year. And the information that I think, again, would be the makeup of the buffer. For instance, the Queensland report talks about whatever size buffer you have, I believe it's 15% fire break on one side, like rocks or DG. Same on the other side to keep them from burning down. It's to be kept free of litter and dead grass and so on. And then the interior part of it, the landscape part of it, should act as a filter, a sieve that filters out particulates and so on. So if you agree with me that we should look at that a little bit down the road, I think that would serve the community well, and we would be giving a little bit more protection to our ag land and to the people that live next to our ag land.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and continue on then. Councilmember Guthrie, why don't you go next?
Well, I concur that we clearly want better guidance on the makeup of the buffers, so that, again, if we have somebody comes in and we can't tell him how to design it and he actually has to go hire somebody, I'm not sure that's quite the direction we necessarily need to go, because we're going to get 10 designers, we're going to get 10 ideas. My suggestion has actually always been that I think this is a natural for one of the Cal Poly projects, and I don't know if we now have time, but you know, we have a university that has an ag department, has a great planning department, and has a great landscape design department, and it just seems like we could put together some sort of interdisciplinary project here where they could come back with at least ideas and using the available data, probably, and using their local knowledge, could actually come up with a much better idea than we'll ever find anywhere else. The timing of that, I know, takes time, and I don't know how quickly things are going to come back, but it's really something that we probably should have looked at quite a while ago, so that we wouldn't have gone through the major catharsis that we did with the one buffer we've designed. I just hate to think that we're going to do this project by project. And granted, we're not going to come up with an exact design for every situation, but we want some range of possibilities and something closer than we were at with the last project we went through. I also have concerns. I know you guys don't necessarily want, but I do think we need to clarify whether it's the lease them all or whatever, but whatever the mitigation measures are, that ultimately we're going to have somebody come and ask to convert ag land. And I don't really want to see that decided in a project atmosphere. So I'd like to see us take a look at establishing what the and have guidelines to provide as much mitigation there as possible. So those are the areas that I'd like to see us proceed. I'm not that familiar with the whole LISA model thing. I wasn't on Planning Commission, fortunately, at that time, because that was a long time. But I'm not sure how really useful that is. I think if we just establish what the mitigations are going to be for the conversion, that that'll be adequate. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My issues here are, obviously, I don't want to unwrap the entire policy. I think that actually it's been working very well. Unfortunately, we're going to have a lot of one-off type projects. I believe the Cherry Creek project was probably the one that was going to be the most concerned because of the conservation easement on the adjacent ag land. And so for me, that's I think was always going to be the most difficult one that we were going to deal with. If we can get Cal Poly to help with the majority of some of this lifting of looking at some of the buffers, I can support that. I'm not sure I can support spending a lot of staff time looking at buffers because I think this is always going to be kind of a bit of a contentious issue, and I'm just not sure that if we have cut and dry, this is what you do, this is what you're not going to do, that they're going to fit into all the different kind of exceptions that we're going to be looking at. And so my concern is that we would be here still modifying, and that's going to be my concern. So I think conversion, we still have some pretty good policies in place right now. If we need to maybe look at that a little closer, because I agree that's probably at some point going to come forward as well. As far as the actual, I know the Councilman Fellows referred to the property over in Elm, and I believe that was actually only a pre-app. I don't think we've actually seen a project there yet. Mm-hmm. So, but that was, again, a very unique situation where the buffers were combined with a road, eucalyptus, and an organic farm, and prevailing winds, and a lot of other things. So I don't think we could have a standard that would apply to that we would probably find one other spot in the city that would actually be relevant. So I'm comfortable with the way the document is right now. I just think we're going to be looking at these case-by-cases as they come forward. If there's a desire to open up a part of it, I'm not going to resist that, but I'm not in favor of going forward with any major relook at the document here. I do think it's working. I will throw out the LISA model. I don't think works at all for our city in the current configuration. I know that I had a chance to deal with it probably more than I would have otherwise if it had not been for our ex-councilman Jim Dickens. He had me over and showed me why, and it's basically designed for very large parcels, and so it pretty much doesn't place any value on what we on the type of ag land that we're trying to preserve. So I do agree with that statement that the LISA model in one way or the other, either we should just remove it from discussion as a value tool because it really doesn't add any value to our city, or we need to create a model that actually looks at the scale of the properties that we have. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, agree that I don't think we should do any major unpacking of this issue and put a lot of staff time into it. I don't think that that's appropriate. What we have is working pretty well. That said, I think we can improve it a bit if we can get some sort of help from Cal Poly with a project to look at some of our specific needs and refinements. That would be an excellent opportunity for us, I think. I think maybe looking at what might be the proper composition of the buffers is worth looking at and coming up with something more appropriate than the LISA model that will work for us will also be worth doing. But I don't think that we should put a great deal of additional staff time into this. Let's see if we can refine this without going to any major efforts.
Thank you. I think I would pretty much go along with the comments that Councilmember Costello and Arnold mentioned. I really do believe that what we have in place seems to be working, but once again with a caveat that that it could be better. And I think the enhancements that have already been mentioned would be beneficial. I'll tell you what I would like to see if we are in fact going to ask Cal Poly to come in with. I would much rather give them a defined project, and I think I would define that project as a menu of potential agricultural buffer design. And in other words, we would have a menu of options that would be acceptable to us and would address the concern that the neighbor would have or the property owner would have that's adjacent to the farmland. Now, the other thing that I want to make clear, and I'm assuming at this point that we probably won't have another, at least not anytime soon, we won't have another model like Cherry Creek. But I think it's important to note that we have to also consider the wishes of the property owner if they currently own property and reside next to active agriculture, as we found in the second phase of Cherry Creek, where we had an opportunity in phase one to put some structure and design to a planned development that had no buffer zone. In other words, houses weren't there, so we could be a little more specific as to how we wanted that buffer zone to be designed. But when you look at the second phase, where you have individual property owners out there, many who have resided next to active agriculture for decades, and they like it that way, I don't think we should be in a position of trying to impose any kind of a buffer zone design on those individuals. For some of them, they like looking out over the ag fields. They don't want anything in their view shed. They've lived there for a long time. They've raised their families there. They like it that way. They feel that the distance in and of itself is sufficient, and that's pretty much their wish. And I don't feel that, you know, in those kinds of situations that, you know, we should be going in and imposing any kind of a design or rule or regulation that compels them, even if they sell the property to someone else, to as a condition of that sale, install some form of structured buffer zone if that property owner chooses not to do it. So I think we have to be very careful about how we approach this. But I do believe that options and a menu are valuable, particularly if people can see a picture of it. Because I know a lot of people don't, and I'm one of them, they don't understand the fancy names for shrubs and plants and barriers and that sort of thing. But if you show them a picture of what, you know, a landscape buffer might look like, that would address their concerns in this particular setting, then I think we've met the responsibility. So those are my thoughts on the issue.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to clarify a question there, a statement you just made. As far as Cherry Creek 2 goes, while you're not suggesting we impose any kind of buffer on the existing owners in the current configuration, you're not implying that if they were to choose to subdivide, that at that point we wouldn't be looking at the ag buffer.
If we're looking at a tear down and a new construction.
Well, I'm actually even speaking more so of like if we were to do what was the proposed map there with the Rita subdivision. So now instead of having the large parcels and the homes are currently far away, all of a sudden now we'd be looking at 8-10 homes. That's a different scenario, and then
that's a different scenario.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we were clear on that.
No, that's a different scenario.
Okay,
but I'm talking about the property owner that might own 2 acres out there right now, and has and chooses not to subdivide. If that's their option, and they choose not to have a structured buffer, then that's their decision.
And I would agree. Okay.
some additional comments as well. Well, first, I'd like to say that as far as protecting ag land goes, whether it's got a conservation easement on it or not, we're going to have the same protections for it. So Cherry Creek was unique in that we created a ton of value out there, and so it drove that process fairly quickly. But it's actually no different than a buffer next to any other ag land. Any piece of ag land deserves the same protection as one with conservation easements. So I just wanted to clarify that it wasn't unique. The other thing I want to say is that while I agree with everyone that the result at Cherry Creek was pretty good, was very good. I don't think that the process was good at all, and that's what I want to avoid, that we end up in a process that there's no clear into it. Now, it's clearer now than it was then, but I don't want a process that's wide open to where anything can happen on any given planning day and that the Planning Commission has to plan the project. I think we need the policies and design guidelines, if you will, buffer guidelines in advance that guide that process, because I don't think that was a good process at all. The result was good.
I'll say, well, I understand you're close to ag land. We have some new requirements. I don't think anybody here is interested in that, and I'm not. I want to respond to some. Ed has another comment. I want to respond to some of the comments when everybody's almost finished.
I just had one to Jim's. And the reason I made the comment as far as because of the conservation easement and with the Dixon property is I actually personally do think we had a higher level of standard to preserve that ag because they made the effort to preserve their ag and basically made it very difficult for them to ever do anything else if it became very difficult for the ag property to be farmed. And that was why I did feel that the 130 feet was appropriate in that scenario, why I don't think we've set a new default at 130 feet for the buffer. In that scenario, it was because of the uniqueness of the size of the property and the fact that this is the only property that we have in our city limits that is actually under conservation easement. So and that's my personal feeling on that. I'm not saying that's a council feeling, but mine was that did actually rise to the highest level of the type of ag land that we're going to ever be able to protect.
Right, and I did understand that, and that's why I responded, because we're going to have to agree to disagree.
Okay.
Well, let's see if we can't summarize and wrap this up. If we were to take your last comment that the outcome of Cherry Creek was reasonably good. It was, it was favorable, but how we got there was painful, not only for us, but perhaps for the Planning Commission. I think probably one of the things we do need to be concerned about is maybe putting some better tools in the hands of the Planning Commission. Their job is difficult enough, and the more guidance and the more references we can give them, the better. Maybe if we look at the outcome of Cherry Creek, what we wound up with, and go backwards into the process and look at what we need to perhaps better achieve that with less pain in the future, either through references or policies or procedures or whatever. And I'm sure that would result in an enhancement to what we have now. Is that similar to where you want to go?
Yes, but I still have a few comments I'd like to make.
Well, I anticipated that. Okay. But is if that's generally, an acceptable path from where we go, from this point forward. So go ahead.
I don't know if Ed's used the word standards the right word or template or whatever. I know that it's not one size fits all, obviously, in our community or anywhere. So I hope it's clear what I'm trying to convey is, and I think you said it pretty well, Mr. Mayor, what we came up with there, perhaps modified based on some up-to-date information from the last 3 years, the study that we're talking about, is worth talking about in the future. I think Jim's idea of a Cal Poly project would fit in fairly well, except I'm a little bit worried about the fact that we've had actually professional landscape people say, oh yeah, I can do buffers, but they've never really done a buffer. So, and I would think a Cal Poly group of students that can find information from Davis or Queensland or wherever of successful uses of certain plants for the buffer, a botany student or a horticulture student is going to say, well, that tree won't grow here, but trees just like it will thrive here, the structure of the tree. And then they can describe the buffer in conifers that never drop all their leaves at once, act as a sieve, and then you need some other deciduous plants and maybe some of this and some of that, not specific species from other areas, but species that do well here. I think that would work well. On South Elm, there was not a prevailing wind problem there. We don't have prevailing winds in this area. That's not an organic farm now. It's a pesticide-free farm, but that's not going to be the use forever. We've got to plan ahead when we're looking at buffers. So if you were looking to make a motion, fine, Mr. Mayor, I would try to make a motion to see if we can come to agreement on what we need staff to look at, with Cal Poly help or without.
Well, why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
Since you brought this and you've listened to everybody, see if you can't capitalize it in the motion.
I move that council instruct staff to include additional up-to-date agriculture buffer analysis and alternatives as part of the update to the agriculture, conservation, and open space element update, which comes later on in the year. It's my understanding from talking to our community development director that that might be at the end of the year. I'd like to see it come sooner, but we do have some constraints based on the budget and so on. I think that our staff should at least explore the idea of getting Cal Poly involved.
Moving for the second alternative.
Yes.
Plus, you wanted further examples and analyses of specific plant species, trees, so on and so forth, models of buffer zones that could be used, and you wanted that project to be undertaken, if possible, by Cal Poly.
In order to, relieve the staff of some of the
okay.
work.
Okay, did you get that, Kelly? Okay. All right, we have a motion. Is there a second? I'll second it. Discussion? Okay. Let me clarify what I meant by Cal Poly. The only reason why I winced was because if we're going to give Cal Poly a project, just as we have in the past, it's going to have some meat on the bones. Because if Cal Poly comes forward, they're going to want to use this particular project to satisfy a class requirement, a project, whatever the case may be. And so it's going to have to be significant enough. It's going to have to be arduous enough for them to challenge them to the point of meeting the requirements of a grade, and so that's why when we brought in Cal Poly, we've given them pretty significant projects like the Grand Avenue Master Plan. So if we're going to bring them in on this, I have no objections to that. But if we're going to bring them in on this, we're going to have to give them some form of a thorough, comprehensive project that they can take back to their professors and say, look, does this meet the requirement? And that's what's going to drive it. So that was my only concern. And if we can do that, fine. I think possibly with the extensive analysis that the Mayor Pro Tem was referring to, that I bet you we can do that. So.
Yeah, I would suggest, the background analysis. I liked your idea of having them provide some alternatives, because usually they have a class and they break up into groups, and so,
right.
They get four or five alternatives. And then I would think that they could provide some ideas and analysis and recommendations on on our own LISA model.
Right, and there's a research component to this that I think could be very helpful as well. That would be embodied in the overall project, and that professors love that. So as a component of a project, so.
Mr. Mayor, can I?
Yeah.
Can we give staff a little bit of flexibility on this as far as timing goes? Because the fact that we've got now the semester's already started, or it will be starting soon, so we wouldn't be adding to this. So the earliest we'd be seeing them probably work on it would be in the fall. And what I don't want to do is
have had in the motion that because this is a 2008 update that staff is now tied, that if they can't get Cal Poly's assistance, where if they had a little bit more time, they could have. I would like to, I guess, leave there some flexibility because we obviously know we have lots of constraints on staff, so that if it looks like it's feasible for Cal Poly to be involved, that we allow some flexibility for that utilization.
Would you allow that in your motion?
Certainly.
Okay, and the second holds.
It was yours.
No, it was his motion.
I know, and you seconded
it. I seconded it.
Oh, I thought you were asking to the second hold.
No, I said the second holds.
Can I just clarification on the motion? Does the motion include the review of the LISA model? Mm-hmm. I just wanted to clarify that it does.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah.
And Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
All right. That will take us to 11B, new business, and I understand, Councilmember Arnold, you brought this to us. Steve, did you want to make an announcement here on 11B?
Well, it's my understanding that I believe Councilmember Arnold would like to continue it, which staff is okay with, to a later date, since some of the interested citizens were not able to be here to comment on it.
That is correct, and they were fine with whatever date certain, and as I said to you in the email, whatever date worked for the staff, they were real flexible. They didn't. It sounded like you wanted to bring it forward sooner than later, and they were fine with that, or if it took a little while, I just wanted to give you flexibility.
So I would suggest, as I understand it, you're going to be gone February 12th. At the February 12th meeting.
Is that the date I gave you?
I think so.
Okay. Yes, that's correct. I'm missing the first one. Yes.
Okay. So obviously, we'd like you to be there since you're the one that requested the items.
Well, why don't you go ahead and make a motion to a date uncertain and leave it in staff's hand to get it.
I think they actually wanted a date certain. It's the second.
Because most of them, most of the business dealt with our upcoming decisions that we're going to be making on the STIP funding cycle, which is going to be important to all of us because of the Briscoe Halcyon 101 project. We also, on the Florida side of the house, we also have appointed an interim transit manager, and to take the place of David Lilly. And gosh, his name escapes me, but from what I understand, he's acted in that position before. And the staff members know him and are excited about him coming aboard. Once again, he's interim and won't be the permanent appointee. The South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District met. I was out of town with the League of Cities. So, Jim, you attended, and I'll defer that report to you. No, you can do it with your regular report. And let's see. The only other issue I have, I'll save for council communication, but it relates to Briscoe Halcyon. And we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem. Chuck?
Thank you, Mayor. To my knowledge, the South County Youth Coalition did not meet in December. They will meet Thursday, and I'll be there. The County Water Resources Advisory Committee met when I was out of town. I think Jim was also out of town, the alternate, and so I have nothing to report on that missed meeting.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, on Zone 3 Water Advisory Board, met last Thursday. I was out of town. However, I did contact Chairman Gehring and asked him if there were any significant issues. And he did say that the habitat conservation plan is still going round and round. And in discussion, determined that actually was submitted 4 years ago. And we've spent in excess of $950,000 so far on this, and still continue to have no success with getting it reviewed.
And we discussed that it might be time to start trying to provide some sort of a political pressure, perhaps. This is a federal issue, maybe by going through members of the House of Representatives and Senate to try and get some sort of action going on it. But that's a lack of movement on that is really frustrating, to say the least. The APCD meets tomorrow. Our bi-monthly meeting is tomorrow. A couple of issues coming up, though, that I want to let people know about that will be coming forward. They're on the agenda tomorrow, and I don't have any. I think they will go forward. We'll have a gas power mower exchange program coming in the spring in May, where you'll be able to turn in your gas-powered mower for a Newton electric mower. I have one myself. They work quite well. For $160, they'll take your old machine and give you the new electrical one. And they're very efficient. The batteries recharge well. Point out that one lawnmower puts out the equivalent of 40 automobiles pollution in an hour. So it's worthwhile to get rid of the old gas mowers when we can. Also, the Carl Moyer Incentive Program Surplus Emission Reductions from Heavy Duty Diesel Engines program is coming up. This is the 10th year of that, where applications will be accepted starting the end of March on that. And one other issue, I will be the chairman of the APCD this upcoming year. Fire Oversight Committee met, I believe, in December was our last meeting. Oceana Community Service District is actively pursuing involvement with the agreement we have with Grover. Things are going very well with the cooperation with Grover. We've consolidated the reserve program for actually all three departments, Grover, Roy Randy, and Oceana, where we all share the same pool of reserves now, the uniform training for all of them, as well as pay and standards. So that's very productive. I don't believe we've had any real activity or movement on the fire consolidation Oversight Committee meeting, Oversight Committee for months, so nothing to report on that, and I think that's it for tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie?
I'll start with the Sanitation District as it continues to operate well, very efficiently. Interesting sort of a side note was that they weren't able to get a competitive bid for one of their $350,000 projects, and they're now going to do it in-house for about half that once they had to look at it. So they're always looking for ways that agreed that on the transfers that we would follow the RTA's lead, and if the RTA continued to have free transfers, that we would. Do you know what the RTA decided there?
Yeah, the update is the SORTA board voted to let the fee waiver expire.
Okay, so it's going to go away.
Which
makes sense that it,
yeah,
it was. I mean, it was a net loss to both agencies. So
right.
And I guess that's it for SCAT. Those are my two reports. Thanks.
Okay, Councilmember Arnold.
Thanks, Mayor. The IWMA did meet in January. I was unable to attend as well as my alternate, but city staff did attend. I had a chance to review the notes, and I don't believe there was anything in there that was real relevant right now. The EVC is currently still working on raising the money for the tourism study, which I know Steve has been working with some of the businesses to try to see if they would be willing to participate as well, and has also been able to, I believe, get a reduced rate if we decide to participate at the city level. So those are my two reports right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll move to item 13, city council member items. There's none listed here, but Steve, I did want to make mention, I don't know about my colleagues, the rest of us up here, but the and I know we can't get too far into it, but I would like some feedback on your follow-up with Lucia Marr on the maintenance facility over there. That's those comments were troubling, especially the drainage and the runoff. The last thing we need is regional water quality, taking a look at that. And so I haven't been out there. I haven't seen the facility itself, but I know we did have a lot of conditions in landscaping and improvements and so on and so forth, and We approved a maintenance site, not a boneyard. So if that's what it's turning out to be, then we need to have a little session with Lou Shamar on that.
We've been working through some issues with them. We have not issued any occupancy permit thus far. So we're trying to get them to address some things before they do that. There are some improvements that they're concerned they're not able to get done in time, and we've been applying the same standards that we do to any other project, which requires them to bond for it. Now, I was notified last week there was some issues with them being able to do that. They were submitting basically a financial report for their own reserves, which isn't the same as bonding. So our indication, what we have indicated to them, unless they can bond as and meet the requirements for any other developer, that they would need to come back to council to get that waived. Meanwhile, we're having some meetings and trying to see how much of the improvements we can get resolved now before they need to occupy.
All right. Well, if we haven't issued occupancy permits, then we need to make sure that they're not in there already.
All right.
Okay. Then let's move down. Any other? Okay. Move down to council communication. Anything?
No.
I just wanted to add a couple of things. Many of us were at League of Cities last week, both policy committees meetings, and I participated in the Leadership Academy. Also had an opportunity to meet with Steve and with Ed up there and talk to our engineer on Briscoe Halcyon, and there is still a good deal of confusion between our engineer and Caltrans, and we're hearing different stories regarding different issues, and it's the same old thing. And Steve prepared an excellent backgrounder, which I walked over and delivered to Sam Blakesley at his office, and had a very nice chat with him and explained to him the problem that we were having with Caltrans, and indicated to him once again that we were not alone. He was very knowledgeable about the funding, the stiff funding, how much there was, the number of projects that were competing. So he was pretty much, you know, up on a lot of it. And so I wasn't asking him to advocate for our project. All I was doing was seeing if it was possible for him to perhaps push a button or two and at least get us to a point where we could compete for the funding. So he assured me that he would check into it. So we'll see what happens. But it's getting pretty bad in terms of interpretation and the story we get from our engineer versus the story we get from Caltrans. In fact, we get different stories.